In progress.
Good morning, Jack. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Morning. Welcome to everybody. We had a short constituency period where we were interacting with our constituencies. I must say that this term is going to be very hectic, very, very hectic, because we will need to deal with the annual performance reports, followed by two legislations, possibly three, but we're not sure about the third one, the cannabis bill, which we must finalize, and then we need to start processing the hate crime, hate speech bill, and if possible, also we will need to finalize the correctional services amendment bill and the CHIPS bill. So this is going to be a very hectic period from now until the end of the term. I hope you have all rested in preparation for this hectic term. I know Honorable Dennis Bettenbach did not. We were in the JSC until Monday, but we have to make sure that we finalize everything between now and the end of the year. Are there any apologies? I have received an apology of Honorable Jelle, who might join us late. She's attending to some family emergency. Are there any further apologies?
Good morning, Chair. We have not received any apologies.
Okay, thank you very much. Can we start by welcoming the Office of the Auditor General, who will brief us on the status of the financial reports and audit report. You have 45 minutes to make your presentation. Your presentation was circulated some time back, and the members have gone through it. So we'll give you 45 minutes to make your presentation.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Mbali Sotetsi. I'm on the Audit of Correctional Services, the department. I just wanted to confirm, Chairperson, are we starting with Correctional Services or the Justice Portfolio?
My understanding was that we are going to do an overview.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I will proceed then with the presentation. I see the one that is being shared is on the whole justice portfolio.
Okay. You can use that one.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Let me just ask Mr. Ilo, who's joining me also to as part of this presentation, to perhaps share the correctional services portfolio first, and then the other colleagues We'll proceed with the justice portfolio. Thank you so much, Chair. Just a second. We're uploading the presentation. Apologies, Chair. I think Mr. Ilof has a technical challenge. I will proceed then maybe to share the presentation from my side. Thank you, Chair. Can I proceed?
Proceed.
Thank you. So, Chairperson, we are here to present the outcomes for the Department of Correctional Services for the year 2020-21-22 financial year. So moving on to our mandate as the Office of the Auditor General.
Can you please jump that straight, just go straight to the issues?
Okay. Thanks, Chair. Maybe just 1 minute on this particular slide on the accountability ecosystem. We're highlighting it because as the Auditor General, we are moving to a new strategy, which is Culture Shift 2030. And here what we're highlighting is that all the role players have to do their part to ensure that we have clean administration, which will then assist entities to move towards delivering on their mandate. So that's what we're just highlighting here, Jen. Then in terms of moving towards the outcomes for DCS, which is the Correctional Services, you will note that for the administration team, there was improvement in the outcomes in that the department moved from being qualified with findings to being unqualified, starting from last year, unqualified with findings. So there are still some issues that need to be addressed, especially as it relates to non-compliance with legislation, which is what is keeping departments in the unqualified with findings category. Then we also looked at the performance then of the department as part of our mandate. What we noted is that the annual performance report that was submitted by DCS had some material misstatements contained in it. And after the audit, the department was able then to adjust the annual performance report, so which resulted in us not reporting any findings in the audit report as it relates to performance reporting. The next item talks to performance against the key targets that we have planned for the year under review. The assessment is that the department achieved 80% of the planned targets for the year, and some of the key targets not achieved included the percentage of confirmed unnatural deaths, as well as the percentage of overcrowding in the correctional facilities. So the impact that we are noting, especially as it relates to overcrowding, is that the non-achievement then results in the approved bed spaces not being at the level where the department can properly accommodate the inmates, with an impact in the safety and the security of the inmates. The next slide, Chair, we're highlighting the key performance targets that were again not achieved, and this is contained in the annual performance report. What we bring this to your attention, so as the committee, you can also then engage the department on the reasons for non-achievement, as well as the corrective action plans in terms of how they're going to address the non-achievements for the year. And this was mainly focused on program 2, which was the one that we selected to audit for this current financial year. Then, Chair, we also did some value-added work on one program, which is program 2 once again, and we focused on the indicator that deals with the number of infrastructure projects completed. So what we are noting here is that there were some delays in terms of the infrastructure projects, and these delays related to some correctional facilities that were supposed to be where the project was supposed to commence in the current financial year. For instance, M2 Njeni, there was a project there which did not commence as planned in the APP. This then impacts on the overcrowding in correctional facilities. And we're noting that there's also possible overspending on project costs, because there may be variations if the projects are not commencing as planned. So we made recommendations then that the accounting officer should engage with the accounting officer of the DPWI to ensure that these projects do start as planned and are completed also on the dates that were planned and agreed with the Department of DPWI. Chairperson, we are also implementing the material irregularity process in the department. since 2018-19. This slide is again just emphasizing what is the definition and what are the possible causes of action that we can take as the AG once we have identified a material irregularity. And this one talks to also the responsibilities then of different parties once an material irregularity has been identified. Chairperson, in the interest of time, I will just highlight the key points, especially for the portfolio committee, to indicate what is expected then from the committee once it's identified an MI, as we had one in the under review in DCS. So where the accounting officer is dealing with the material irregularity, meaning that they are implementing appropriate steps to deal with it, we expect that the committee will then monitor the progress and call the accounting officer to account on the actions that they are taking and the outcomes thereof. So during the year under review, we identified a material irregularity in the Department of Correctional Services because the payment was not made on time, and that resulted in the department incurring interest. So this was in relation to a court judgment that was not settled within 30 days. So we did issue a notification to the accounting officer on 30 June 2022, and the accounting officer has responded to us to indicate that they will be investigating the matter, which must be completed by 30 September 2022. And they're indicating that based on the outcome of the report, they will then take the necessary steps. Chairperson, this is also just our observations and recommendations based on this particular material irregularity, wherein we are recommending that the portfolio committee should then monitor the progress that the accounting officer has taken in terms of investigating this matter and also the implementation of consequence management and the recovery of the financial loss, as well as putting measures in place to prevent further instances in future. Chairperson, in terms of the financial reporting, we noted that there were no material misstatements that we identified on the financial statements, and therefore there was no need to make any particular adjustments based on the financial statements that were submitted for audit, which means that the department had sound financial management controls which prevented material misstatements from occurring. Moving on to compliance with key legislation, we are noting that the department once again this year had material findings that were reported in the annual report, so meaning that there was no movement compared to the prior, even for compared to the first year of administration. So for the last 4 years, the department had material findings on compliance with key legislation. And in the main, it related to procurement and contract management, prevention of irregular expenditure and fraudulent and wasteful expenditure, effecting consequence management, and there was an additional finding this year on payments not made within 30 days, which then also resulted in the material irregularity. Moving on to procurement and payments, again, we noted recurring findings against the department when it comes to procurement, complying with procurement legislation, and in particular, the issue of them using quotations where contracts are not in place, which then accounts for a significant balance of that amount that was incurred for the year of 954 million. Chairperson, we further analyzed the irregular expenditure incurred by the department. As I indicated, it was 954 million for the year under review. What we're noting is that this non-compliance had an impact on the five pillars of procurement in terms of Section 217 of the Constitution, which is equitable, fair, cost-effective, transparent, and competitive. But in the main, it had an impact on the cost-effectiveness and transparency and competitiveness. Then, Chairperson, we looked at consequence management to see how the department is dealing with the balance of irregular expenditure as it remains in the financial statements. So the department for 2020-21 they had 5.8 million in the financial statements, 5.8 billion in terms of irregular expenditure, which then becomes the opening balance for the year under review. So we looked at how the department has then dealt with the 5.8 billion opening balance. And in our assessment, we can note that there was 8 million that was condoned, but the rest of that balance is not yet dealt with. And the main reasons for the balance not being dealt with is because the department is still in the process of doing investigations. And in some cases, they have done investigations, then they must still obtain condonation from National Treasury. So at that year end, the process to also investigate all of the instances had not started for certain cases. And that is why we then reported non-compliance as it relates to consequence management. Chairperson, we are just moving quickly to key financial management issues, wherein we are highlighting once again the irregular expenditure incurred, as well as the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which was 75 million for the year under review. And in the main, this related to interest paid on settlement of court judgment. Then our conclusions and recommendations are looking at what were the root causes that caused this finding for the department. We also made certain recommendations to the accounting officer. So in the main, the root causes were around action plans that were developed, but the actions were not fully addressed, which resulted then in the recurring audit findings. Consequence management remained an issue in that the department had not started all investigations into irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure issues. There's also an issue of instability or vacancies in key positions. So those were the three main root causes that resulted in the findings that we're reporting. We made then recommendations to the accounting officer to address these particular root causes, and the accounting officer had made then commitments to address these issues, in particular the issue of monitoring progress of implementing the action plans, as well as addressing consequence management. We also received commitments from the minister as it relates to these matters. These are also in line with the commitments from the accounting officer as they deal with the action plans, consequence management, as well as filling of vacancies. Chairperson, lastly, we have the portfolio committee message, wherein we looking back at the recommendations that we made to the committee to also monitor the department's actions to address issues that we reported previously. And our reflection was that the committee has performed the oversight role and called on the department to report on the outcomes of implementation of those plans for the year, for the prior year, as well as the progress on consequence management. We further then make new recommendations or make new key messages to the committee to again continue to call on the accounting officer and the executive to give feedback on how they're addressing the matters that we have reported, including the material irregularity that we have reported for the year under review. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mamukotete. Members, are there any questions to the Office of the AG? Please don't ask questions that are supposed to be answered by the department. Honorable Horn.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Good morning to all colleagues and the Auditor General. Thank you for the presentation. Chair, I, in preparing for this meeting, looked back at the report of last year of the Auditor General, and there's two issues I just want to maybe get feedback on to complete the picture. Last year and the preceding years, the AG made one of the adverse findings made by the AG was that the manner in which DCS went about to establish the as they call it, lock-up number of detainees on a daily basis, and to integrate those figures. Preceding years, the AG deemed that to be unreliable, and it was a basis on which there was then consequently a qualification. I don't see in the report of this year from the AG any reference to that. So could we be apprised as to whether that is still a persisting issue? And if not, could we get assurance that that has then been solved to the satisfaction of the Auditor General? And then the other aspect that was also in the past part of the comments of the Auditor General was the lack of a fully functional internal audit unit and an audit committee. So could the AG please just brief us on whether that recurring issue has also been solved to their satisfaction in the run-up to the preparation of this year's report? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Horn. Honorable Newt Trofen.
Thank you, Chair. Can the host spotlight me, please? Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everybody. I have two questions to the AG. Overcrowding in the correctional services centres and there not being enough bed space, that is a recurring problem. So I would like to know, as the AG said, it's an unqualified audit with findings. And overcrowding is a big problem. Does that then mean that the department's audit results will always be unqualified because overcrowding is a persistent problem year in, year out? And then secondly, in terms of irregular expenditure, the investigations that have not yet commenced, will the AG then continue monitoring the progress of the investigations until all the irregular expenditure can be accounted for? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nivo Trochan, Honorable Jano Engelbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to get clarity on where the 5.8 billion rand that was not dealt with, according to the report that we received, is that amount all the previous years combined, as well as this year, or is this, I just want some clarity on that 5.8 billion amount. And then furthermore, the irregular expenditure and the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, irregular expenditure of 954 and the fruitless of 75, was that specifically this financial year?
Are you done, Honorable Member?
I am done, thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Yako?
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much to the AG for the presentation. I think it's very worrisome for a department as great as this one to have an unqualified report with findings. Moreover, what is more concerning is the backlog of the irregular expenditure, which has not been addressed. And I'm wondering to the AG, when they engage with them on the backlog of the 5 billion, the 5.8 billion that has been lingering there as irregular expenditure, knowing that they've only worked with just a small percentage of that, what is the plan when the department comes to you and accounts for the plan for that 5 billion? Can we have a sense of what was the plan for the department to deal with that 5 billion? Because now we have an extra 954 million that we must deal with, which takes us to now almost 6 billion, if I'm understanding it correctly. So my issue is we cannot have a department that is consistent in having irregular expenditure, because then it means that it's the norm to just deviate from everything and put it under irregular expenditure when we don't want to deal with systematic use of systems. There are systems in place, procurement systems in place for this reason, and the department should always adhere to it if it is a department that is above board. So now it brings a question. What is actually happening in this department? Is it just a source for some to take monies out and just put it under irregular expenditure? It makes us worry then about the quality of the leadership that we have in the department. So I wonder what engagements has the AG done, in particular when it comes to consequence management? Do they revert back to you? And what are the timelines in which they are supposed to be reverting back to you with constant reports to say, this is what we've done, addressing the irregular expenditure, addressing the consequence manager for the wasteful expenditure? Yeah, thank you, Chair. That's my question.
Thank you very much. Honorable Nivo Trukhad, is that an old hand or a new hand?
Apologies, Chair, it's a new hand. It's one question that I missed out earlier. Can I proceed?
Yes, you can proceed.
Can the host please? So the department, do they need to report back, or they need to report back by the 30th of September? Has they already submitted that report on the 30th of September? And if not, why not? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nivol Tohan. Over to you, AJ.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honorable Member, for those questions. The first question was on the issue of lookup numbers and the reliability thereof. Chairperson, this matter did not result in a qualification in the prior year. Actually, it was not even reported as part of the issues under performance information. So that's the clarity I can highlight on this particular matter, that we didn't have any findings in the prior on the issue of lockup numbers. Then there was a question about whether the department does have a fully functional internal audit as well as audit committee. Chairperson, we can confirm that the department indeed does have an internal audit that is fully functional, as well as an audit committee. Chairperson, this committee can also engage the audit committee on the work that they've done for the under review. They are part of the accountability ecosystem, and they have a legislated function in terms of the PFMA. But just to answer the question, yes, they are in place and they are functional. The issue of overcrowding, yes, it is a recurring matter that the department has been struggling to address the issue around overcrowding in the correctional facilities. And in terms of our report, it does not really affect the unqualified findings, because it will only be reported if we had challenges in terms of verifying the number that they are reporting in the annual performance report. But in this year, for instance, we didn't have any challenges around the reliability of the numbers that the department reported. In the prior years, yes, there was an issue. Prior to last year, there was an issue around the numbers that the department was reporting, and we did report on a finding to say the numbers were not reliable. But that has since been resolved starting from last year. In terms of consequence management, yes, we do engage with the department, because this is one of the critical matters that we are reporting on the department. And we've been assured by the accounting officer that they have plans in place to investigate all the recurring, the backlog in terms of instances of irregular expenditure, And we've noted that as we're auditing that they do have a number of investigations that are still in progress. So as long as they are still in progress, it does not then deal with the issue of the backlog of irregular expenditure, because it can only be resolved once they've done all the investigations, done consequence management, and submitted those instances to National Treasury for condonement. So because they are still in progress, they are not able to deal with the backlog of 5.8 billion. So to confirm also, the next question was on the amount. Yes, the 5.8 billion is in relation to prior years. It's a cumulative amount relating to prior years, excluding the 954 million for the current year under review. And then the next question was just on the fruitless and irregular, to say, is the 75 million for the current year on fruitless and 954 for the current year on irregular expenditure? And the straight answer is that yes, that's correct. Those are the new amounts incurred for the 21-22 financial year. I think I have addressed, Chairperson, the question about the plan to address the backlog, to say that the commissioner has indicated that there is a plan to address the backlog of irregular expenditure investigations. Based on our audit, we still identified some. There were some instances that were not yet started in terms of investigating, but there were some that were already in progress relating to the prior years. Then the last question, Chair, was on the accounting officer to indicate that, where he indicated that he will report back on the investigation relating to the material irregularity by 30 September 2022. We have not yet received a report from the accounting officer. We will follow up on that particular report to see whether it has been finalized and what are the next steps that the accounting officer is going to implement to address the material irregularity as indicated in his response. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mbali. Members, can we move on to the next presentation, which will cover justice? I think we still have a second bite when the department appears before us to ask some of the questions that they must answer in relation to what has been presented. But before we receive a presentation on justice, the commissioner, I can see, is with us today, Commissioner Tobagale. He used to be an acting national commissioner, but is now a commissioner. The national commissioner is no more acting. He has been appointed. We would like to welcome Mr. Tobagale to our committee, and we pledge to work closely with him until the end of our term in 2024. We are hoping that we will continue to have a fruitful engagement with him and his team as we continue to do our own oversight over the department. Welcome, National Commissioner.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you also for the words of well wishes. One continues to pledge also that we will do the work that we are supposed to do to ensure that when we appear before the committee to account, we actually have got all the answers that the committee would want us to provide to the questions that the committee will have for us. Having said that, thank you, Chairperson. Let me step off.
No, thank you very much, National Commissioner, and congratulations on your appointment. Can we move to the second presentation?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to take you through the audit outcomes for the 21-22 audit cycle in the Department of Justice portfolio. Moving to the next slide, we have our reputational promise, but I'll skip that slide. And in my presentation, I'm going to incorporate the Office of the Chief Justice as well as the constitutional institutions, that being the Public Protector South Africa and the South African Human Rights Commission, over and above the entities that report to the Department of Justice and Correctional and Constitutional Development. Next slide, please. The accountability ecosystem, my colleague Mbali went through it high level. However, I want to also just emphasize that this slide seeks to express that there are multiple role players within the accountability ecosystem, which are all required to function effectively and complementary to each other, such that they can then enable each other to be able to discharge their responsibilities and mandates allocated by legislation. It is imperative that all these stakeholders, they work together to ensure that they unlock service delivery and ensure that the lived experiences of the citizens are impacted. The Auditor General's logo is sitting at the center, which highlights that we have access to audit all the stakeholders that are indicated under this section. And also through our work and our audit outcomes, we obtain audit insights, which we then use to influence the decisions that are made, the forecast areas, as well as the behavior, especially to those that are responsible for leadership in the government institutions. And we also have an option to enforce certain rules and regulations through the powers that were given to us by the PAA Amendment Act that became effective from the 5th of April 2019. Moving to the next slide, which has the audit outcomes of the portfolio. So within the portfolio, we have 9 institutions. And out of these institutions, 7 obtained clean audit outcomes in the prior year. However, that has since regressed to 6 in the year 21-22. And that being attributable to the regression that was noted in the Office of the Chief Justice, receiving an unqualified audit outcome for the year 21-22 with findings on compliance subject matters. This will be further unpacked on the upcoming slides. And also we noted that the Department of Justice, as well as the South African Human Rights Commission, maintained the outcomes which they had in the priors, that being a qualification in the case of the Department of Justice due to the issues that were noted on contingent liabilities, as well as the material adjustments that were noted with regards to the South African Human Rights Commission and other findings relating to non-compliances and audit of predetermined objectives. So overall, we observed that there's been a regression over the administration term due to the regression by the Office of the Chief Justice. At the end of our audit cycle, we didn't have any outstanding audits. So this is a comprehensive and complete report with regards to the performance of the portfolio in terms of the audit outcomes for the 21-22 cycle. Moving to the next slide, Cheverton. The quality of the financial reports and the financial statements that were submitted by the portfolio for the 21-22, 78% of the audits within the portfolio submitted financial statements that were credible and free from material misstatements prior to being audited, which means there was no reliance on the audit process to obtain results that are reliable to ensure that this is credible information that can be used for decision making. And this is commendable and attributable to sound control environment by those responsible for day-to-day running of these institutions. However, we have the South African Human Rights Commission, which relied on the audit process to be able to achieve a credible financial reporting, where we noted the material adjustment on the payables from exchange transactions. The institution incorrectly classified or assessed items as accruals, whereas they should have been disclosed and presented as payables from exchange transactions. And this resulted to a material adjustment in the annual financial statements that were submitted for audit. And unfortunately for the Department of Justice, it continued to receive the qualification due to the issues that were identified on contingent liabilities, whereby we noted that there were no adequate systems and processes in place to ensure that the contingent liabilities are substantiated by records that are conforming or are in accordance with the modified cash basis framework. And our observation is that the vacancy at CFO level contributed to the breakdown at of the internal controls within the department. However, this has since been rectified because the position was filled with the CFO position was filled as at 1 April 2022. So going forward, this should then remedy the situation. In terms of impact, we're noting that in the case of the Human Rights Commission, they've not had a proper and adequate action plans to be able to address prior issues, because these issues of non-compliance and submission of non-credible financials is a recurring issue. And in the case of the Department of Justice, we are just highlighting that the legal department within the department, as well as the finance unit, they need to work with each other to ensure that they maintain adequate information to be able to present contingent liabilities in a manner that is going to be compliant to the requirements of the modified cash basis framework. And the next slide, we have financial health considerations and our observation in terms of the debt collection period. We are noting that the portfolio is struggling with collection of debtors. And in the case of the Department of Justice's SIU, these are service offering institutions, and as such, the balances that are owed to them, they are owed by other state institutions. And this is even more concerning, considering that the SIU, being the Special Investigating Unit, mandate may be impacted in the future if this they continue in this path, as they rely on their own funds to be able to discharge and continue doing the work that they do in terms of investigation. So this is something that needs to be attended to, and perhaps the portfolio can employ multiple interventions, including the portfolio committee also reaching out to the other portfolio committees, whereby the Department of Justice and SIU are being owed large sums of money. And there's also the Legal Aid South Africa, which indicates that it takes them about 369 days to collect debts. And this is attributable to the transfer of the land rights management unit from the Department of Agriculture. And that resulted in the increase in the number of days it takes this institution to collect monies owed to them. Within the portfolio, we also noted that there's a few auditees that are still taking longer than 30 days to pay service providers. And in the year under review, we did not identify any interest in fruitless and wasteful expenditure attributable to this trend. However, it remains a risk in terms of these institutions end up incurring fruitless and wasteful expenditure as a result of these delays, and also having a negative impact on the businesses, whereby when they do not make these payments, because some of these small businesses, they rely on the invoices being paid for them to continue going forward. In terms of impact, overall, there is no going concern issues within the portfolio. However, we've noted that the bank overdraft of the department continues to grow as a result of the issues noted relating to the collection of data. I'm going to the next slide. We here considering the compliance with key legislation within the portfolio, and we've noted overall a regression within the portfolio, whereby the Office of the Chief Justice reported a non-compliance findings in their audit report for the first time. And this was attributable to the issues relating to procurement of IT goods and services without following the CETA processes. And this is something that is regrettable. And the usual, the Department of Justice and the South African Human Rights Commission, they continue to receive findings on non-compliance with key legislation. Matters relating to procurement and contract management in the department are mostly attributable to the fact that there's still a lack of procurement framework for legal services, and therefore state attorney offices tend to not follow procurement processes when they are procuring for legal services to represent other government institutions. In terms of the quality of financial statements, since we noted material misstatements in the department and the Human Rights Commission, we therefore also reported a non-compliance with key legislation relating to the submission of credible financial statements. Because of the non-compliances noted on procurement and contract management, these institutions also reported irregular expenditure, which resulted into us reporting an
non-compliance with the regular expenditure not being presented. There's also a growing trend in terms of the balance on irregular expenditure, which resulted in us reporting findings on consequence management, which will be further unpacked on the next slide. Next slide, please. In terms of procurement and contract management, we noted findings across different institutions within the portfolio, but of the key contributors were the Department of Justice and the Office of the Chief Justice. I just want to go back to the reasons as to why there were these findings as well. And in the department, again, it relates to the reason which I've already mentioned relating to the issue of the procurement framework. And in the Office of the Chief Justice, it's the matters relating to procurement of IT goods and services which were not compliant with the CITA requirements in terms of procurement of IT goods and services. In the Human Rights Commission, they also have challenges with procurement and contract management relating to mostly instances whereby the evaluation processes and criteria that are used, they do not conform to the criteria which were stipulated and specified in the bidding documents when they were advertised and also on the documents which were supposed to be returned by the bidders. On the next slide, we are showing irregular expenditure that was incurred for the 2021-22 financial cycle. The portfolio, unfortunately, it shows an increasing trend in terms of the irregular expenditure that was incurred in the current year, that being the 966 million. A majority of that is attributable to the 859 million, which was reported for the first time by the Department of Justice. This relates to the security contract which has since expired and payments that were made in the prior years. However, the investigation of this particular instances was concluded in the year 2021-22. What happened in this case was that bidders which did not comply with stipulated pre-qualifying conditions were not identified and eliminated during the evaluation stages. And ultimately, these service providers then unfairly benefited from this process and received these contracts and payments. In the case of the Office of Chief Justice, again, it's the issue of IT goods and services not being procured following the CITA procurement regulations. And also in the South African Human Rights Commission, it's the issue of evaluation not being consistent with the stipulated criteria as per the bidding documents and the tender invitation. This is an infringement on the principles of procurement, that being the requirement of the Constitution to ensure that procurement processes are equitable, fair, cost-effective, transparent, as well as competitive. In terms of the irregular expenditure presented for the current year, there is potentially around 50 million, which may still come through in the next financial cycle, relating to payments and expenses that were incurred in the 21-22, which are still under investigation. And the department reported these instances under irregular expenditure under assessment in their financial statements. So we are highlighting in this instance that the irregular expenditure that has been presented is not complete, as some instances are still under assessment. Going to the next slide, the closing balance of the irregular expenditure within the portfolio has also increased, which is regrettable. We noted that the portfolio dealt with irregular expenditure to a certain degree. However, there were some of amounts that were still not dealt with as at year end, and that amounts to about 30 million. Some of this balance, which we couldn't confirm that it's been dealt with, was attributable to the lack of proper record keeping to confirm if investigations have been conducted to obtain understanding as to what transpired and also where officials are found to have resulted or permitted occurrence of irregular expenditure can then be held accountable. Our observation is that the closing balance continues to grow without consequence management being applied, and if this trend continues as a result of the slow investigations, the portfolio might end up not being in a position to recover, or the likelihood of recovering these irregular expenses might decrease as a result of the delays in terms of concluding the investigation processes within the portfolio. That mostly being attributable to the irregular expenditure in the department. Moving to the performance information, on the first slide, Chairperson, we are expressing that out of the auditors within the portfolio, only two submitted annual performance reports that were credible before the auditing process. And this is rather unfortunate because in the main, the portfolio relied on the audit process to ensure that there's credible information that can be relied upon for reporting of performance information that can be used for decision making. In the main, there were four auditors that submitted annual performance reports that carried material misstatements. After the audit process, only two remained with material misstatements within the programs that were audited, that being the Department of Justice and the South African Human Rights Commission. Mainly, the findings that were noted in that space related to the source information for achieving some planned targets not being clearly defined, and this results to a certain degree of judgment when it comes to the collection and collation of information that is used for reporting performance achievements, which then results to information not being reliable when it's presented in the schedules that support the performance achievements reported in the annual performance report. In some instances, the method of calculation was not also clearly defined, and there were no adequate systems and processes to ensure that information is adequately, is consistently collected and reported in the annual performance reports. That also resulted in some qualifications and findings on the performance report of South African Human Rights Commission. In the main, in terms of the reliability of the performance information within the department and the South African Human Rights Commission, there were instances whereby the supporting evidence which we obtained materially differed from the evidence that was presented in the schedule supporting the performance reports and the performance information, while in other instances we also could not obtain or we did not obtain evidence in support of the reported performance achievements. This is attributable to a lack of accurate and complete records that are not maintained within these institutions. In terms of impact, Chairperson, we are saying in the absence of reliable information or in the event where we are unable to confirm credibility of these reports, we then also cannot confirm that service delivery actually did take place. And as such, the reported performance information is not credible. Moving to the next slide. This slide, Chairperson, just represents the performance achievement of the planned targets within the portfolio. And this is mainly based on the annual reports of these institutions. It's not based on the work that was done in terms of the audit. It's a reflection of information that is presented in the annual reports of these institutions. On average, the portfolio achieved around 78.5%, and there are two institutions which performed below this average, that being the South African Human Rights Commission and the Legal Aid South Africa. Of these institutions, what is concerning is the Department of Justice and the South African Human Rights Commission. Based on our audit outcomes, whereby we expressed modified outcomes and reported material findings on their audit reports relating to performance information, these reported achievements are therefore cannot be confirmed whether they are reliable information, which means service delivery took place, and also that this service delivery actually resulted in impact in terms of the lived experiences of the general citizen. Moving to the next slide. Chairperson, as a value add contribution from our side as the Office of the AG, we further went beyond just auditing the usefulness and reliability of the performance information. We reflected on the targets that are allocated to the Department of Justice as a lead in terms of the MTSF framework for the 2019 to 2024 administration. We identified that there are 14 indicators within the MTSF that are allocated to the department, and 12 of these we have prioritized within the plans of the department. And about two of these indicators were then not prioritized. We'll indicate the reasons on the next slide as to why some of them were not prioritized. So far, about 91% of the planned indicators are well on their way to be achieved at the end of 2024 based on the progress that has been made so far, with the exception of a few issues that we will highlight in the upcoming slides. However, our general observation and concern was that there are a number of other indicators which are sitting in the performance plans of the department, which are informed by the legislative mandate of the department. However, these are not tracked at a national level as they do not form part of the MTSF framework. So perhaps there's an opportunity to look holistically in the upcoming years and the upcoming administrations and to say, are the MTSF targets that are being tracked in the case of the department or the portfolio actually a complete list of the responsibilities and mandates that is allocated to this institution based on legislation and other sources of their responsibilities. And then we also noted that there are some indicators which are really critical in terms of ensuring a turnaround, in terms of redressing previous disadvantaged groups. So there's a target relating to the percentage of briefs allocated to female legal practitioners, which is 41% annually. However, when you look at this in value, it translates to 29%. And we then further analyzed this and noted that this has been consistently targeted at 29% without necessarily showing a growth trend. So it's planned in a manner that is not stretched and therefore does not reflect or make an impact. And another observation or concern from our side was that we noted that most of the indicators that are measured in terms of percentages, they focus on the population that has been finalized under the year reviewed each year. It therefore does not reflect on the backlogs in terms of instances where applications have been received with adequate supporting evidence. However, they have not been processed within the department. So the reported achievements may be a distorted reality if there's a lot of backlogs that are sitting in the archives of the department, which are unknown at this point. Moving to the next slide, quickly, I'm going to run through this one. It just has reasons. I don't think I need to read through it. We'll just skip this slide and go to the next slide. No. Okay, thanks. Chairperson, we have two indicators relating to the value of freezing orders obtained for corruption as well as value of recoveries relating to corruption. So the first indicator we are happy with is that the department is making good progress to achieve this. In fact, at this point, the department has already made more than 90% of the targeted performance within the administration term. So the department is well on its way to be able to achieve this target at the end of the cycle. With the exception of the value of recoveries relating to corruption or related offences. So far, the department is sitting around a performance of 30 to 35% when it comes to this indicator on overall cumulative performance achievement. And this is concerning looking at the fact that there's only 2 years remaining in the administration. Chairperson, the annual target is 1.4 billion. However, but the department has not been able to achieve this target in any of the previous 3 years. So it does not seem like the department will be able to achieve this target at the end of the MTSF cycle. However, we further noted that the Special Investigating Unit also has a similar target relating to the value of recoveries relating to corruption. So as these two institutions are sitting within one portfolio, there is an opportunity to consolidate and then see if the department is making adequate progress to address this particular indicator. However, what needs to be taken into consideration when this is done is to ensure that there are no duplications, as on some instances, the Special Investigating Unit does refer some cases to the National Prosecuting Authority, which might result in information being duplicated between the two institutions. So this needs to be eliminated when the consolidation process takes place. And moving to the next, a target relating to the percentage of conviction, just the previous slide. In South Africa, there continues to be a challenge with regards to cable theft, and the department has a target for percentage conviction rates in cable theft cases. In terms of MTSF, the target is 74% conviction rate in cable theft cases annually. However, the department set itself a target of 80% and they've been able to exceed this by 12%, achieving 92% of the targeted performance information. However, our concern was that when we analyzed the portfolio, we looked at the SAPS planning documents and reporting documents. We looked at the other institutions within the security cluster portfolio. We noted that there is no institution that necessarily measures the number of arrests in reported instances of cable theft, which then sort of distorts the picture because there needs to be a reflection before we talk about the conviction in terms of whether arrests are being made in cases where cable theft issues are reported. It's pretty much difficult to marry the reality of the lived experiences of the general citizens when we say the department is achieving 92% while issues of cable theft continues to be prevalent and hampers service delivery in terms of the economy where there's lack of power due to the cable theft or general citizens' lives are just being interrupted. Next slide. There's performance targets that are sitting in the department's plan. However, these are not necessarily allocated to the department in terms of the MTSF. However, the reason why we then decided to elevate them is that these are somewhat different in terms of design in the department as they are measuring the number of persons convicted in these instances, not necessarily the percentage, which would then also reflect to the number. It does not reflect on the basis under which this rating is supposed to be reported, which then distorts the service delivery picture without so much reflecting on the cases that were prosecuted for impact. We overall on the NPA program and the department, we are reflecting that there's a challenge with regards to the fact that there's no information which indicates that this institution is checking the number of cases whereby they do not successfully prosecute and find the people that are being prosecuted guilty, and also to understand the reasons behind those so that then lessons can be taken and improvements can be made with regards to instances whereby there's shortcomings within the department's processes. And also we just further highlighting as a positive contribution that in the past or in the prior year, there was a concern with regards to the manner how the percentage of National Register for Social Offenders clearance certificates was being measured as it focused on the population which is finalized under the current year, without so much as reflecting on the applications that were received. And the department has since revised this particular indicator. The department set itself a 50% target for the 21-22 cycle and achieved 82% of the target, which means it is possible and it is meaningful to be able to produce such performance information in that manner. And then in the next slide, we continue on the intent to add value within the portfolio. So in terms of the MTSF, there's also a target that are meant to ensure that there's a fully modernized criminal justice system to ensure and cap the issues of delays in terms of investigations, the issues of prosecution not being able to successfully achieve the targeted objectives because there's lack of information due to the fact that there's over-reliance on manual systems, and also clear up the backlogs that are currently sitting within the system. Our observation was that 90% of the budget has already been spent. However, the cluster or the program cannot account and say the criminal justice system is being realized, as there continues to be a reliance on manual systems, and also the issues of case backlogs are still not being addressed because this integrated justice system is still not fully functional. We noted that there are governance structures in place which are operational and overseeing the process of project management for this particular system. However, there continues to be challenges relating to resource constraints, contract management, and vendor management. We are aware that there are 8 member departments within this integrated justice system and program. However, so far, the Department of Home Affairs and the South African Police Services, as well as the Department of Correctional Services, are the main departments that are contributing to the major delays in finalizing the integrated justice system. And without these three departments pulling through and ensuring that they address the backlogs and the delays, the integrated justice system will not become a reality. And our recommendation is that the program management, the project management office, as well as the recommendations provided by the Office of the Auditor General, they need to be implemented to improve overall the project success rate, enable the achievement of the goal of integrated justice system. These delays have resulted in delays in terms of addressing issues of case backlogs, the reliance on manual systems, and difficulties in retrieval of information because there is no system which is functional that can be used as integrated source where information can be drawn. And my colleagues from the correctional services will also say this also resulted in the issues of overcrowding. When I spoke to them just the other day, they made mention that there are instances where the department takes longer to process, or the cluster takes longer to process detainees that are currently awaiting whether they are going to be officially charged in instances as such. So overall, the department and the cluster needs to implement the recommendations to ensure that this issue of the integrated justice system is accelerated. Moving to the next slide, Chairperson, I'm going to move through this one quickly. My colleague Bali did go through the issues of material irregularity high level. In our case, there were three institutions that were scoped in for material irregularities for the 21-22 audit cycle. However, we have not identified any MI that we would bring to attention of the portfolio committee to the attention of the portfolio committee at Chairperson. So I'm not going to go through this information. I'll just skip through and go to the recommendations. Mostly our observation in terms of the root causes that resulted to the issues which we noted in the portfolio were, one, there were issues of vacancies that impacted the lack of segregation of duties in certain instances, as well as the issue of action plans that were not necessarily implemented appropriately and timely to ensure that the issues that were reported in the prior years are addressed. There's also a lack of capacity constraints within the performance reporting space in the department, as well as the South African Human Rights Commission, mostly in the provinces. Around the performance information, more especially in the department, there's the challenge in terms of record keeping, whereby information to substantiate the reported performance achievement is not always available in certain instances, or where it is available, it's not credible and it's not accurate, complete and valid. So these in the main were the issues that we noted, and also in terms of the non-compliance with the procurement processes for the Department of Justice, then that needs to be addressed with agency is the issue of the lack of procurement framework. So our key recommendations are that with regards to the vacancies, this needs to be filled as a matter of agency, as well as the issue of the CFO vacancy in the South African Human Rights Commission. In case of the action plans, we recommend that the accounting officer and the accounting authorities need to monitor these on a quarterly basis to ensure that they are being implemented and monitored such that the reoccurrence of these findings and issues does not repeat itself in the next cycle. Next slide, please. In terms of the contingent liabilities, considering the volume of issues and cases that are lodged against the department, it's going to take the department a manual exercise to be able to update and obtain the relevant information which will enable the department to be able to address the prior qualification. So we are recommending that perhaps temporal staff should be considered to populate this voluminous historical information, and also in the future or going forward, these progresses and information with regards to the development of each case should then be updated regularly and immediately whenever there's an event that takes place in relation to the particular case. And thereafter, the legal department should determine the possible outcome of these cases and record it as such in the register which supports the disclosure not of the contingent liabilities. And this will then be enable the department to be able to move forward as the finance unit will be able to take this information and use it adequately to present financial statements that are fair and free from material misstatements. We made ourselves available to the department to say if this information can be submitted prior to an official submission of the AFS, we are willing to make ourselves available to the Office of the Auditor General. So we recommend to the department that this process should be concluded timeously to allow the internal auditors as well as the external auditors to provide an assurance without necessarily following the official submission of the AFS processes. In terms of performance information, we recommend that the department and the portfolio should consider developing a tool to track the department's and the portfolio's performance in terms against the MTSF indicators to ensure that by the end of the MTSF cycle, then the portfolio will be able to achieve all the set targets and indicators. There also needs to be a design, there's a need for design of systems and processes to ensure collection of information is done in a manner that achieves credible reporting and there's valid, accurate and complete records that substantiate reported performance achievements. And this also should be done in a timely manner to ensure that the necessary assurance providers have adequate time to be able to review and also provide a secondary level of assurance that these are presented in a manner which is sound. Moving to the next slide, we obtained commitments from the executive authority when we engaged him on the outcomes of the portfolio. He committed to follow up on the issue of irregular expenditure closing balance to ensure that the investigations are finalized and closed and consequence management principles are applied where applicable. He also confirmed that our recommendations are clear and they are positioned in a manner that allows the department to be able to implement and improve its processes when it comes to financial management reporting as well as performance management reporting. When we briefed the minister, we also raised that we noted a trend in terms of service providers that are doing business with government in other government institutions whereby they will transgress and misuse financial resources that are entrusted to them to be able to assist government in driving its mandate. But when these are raised in the form of material irregularities, then these institutions actually just go on voluntary liquidation. So we were appraising the minister to say there's this general trend that we've noted. However, we have not done a deep dive to understand the basis and the key concerns relating to specific projects. So the minister committed that he already had a briefing that was coming up with the master, whereby he'll receive an outline in terms of the challenges for on the liquidation processes, including legal challenges. Once that has been done, he will then be in a position to engage us as the Office of the Auditor General and will then take the conversation forward and will also perhaps be in a position to present specific examples in terms of this trend that we've noted. In terms of the AAPP gaps that we noted, he indicated that this is perhaps a cluster issue and there needs to be conversation to try and close these gaps within the cluster. Please move to the next slide. Next slide, please. Chairperson, I'm going to go through the next slide. Briefly, I'm not going to talk to them in detail. So on this slide, we were just highlighting the journey that has been taken by the Solicitor General since he was appointed on the 2nd of April 2020. There's some policies which have been approved, and these are instrumental in addressing the issues of litigations against the state. However, we're highlighting that there's still no procurement framework, so the Office of the State Attorney continues to operate in manners that is not compliant with the supply chain management regulations. And this is specifically concerning considering that there are targeted indicators and targets which are set out to address issues of previously disadvantaged groups in terms of transformation. And without a procurement framework, this becomes a challenge because the department then, how does it intentionally make it a point that these are then implemented based on how legal service providers are appointed? We further noted that the department measures itself on the number of cases on the percentage of state legal cases that are circled. without so much as measuring itself on the cases that have been finalized, because there's a huge backlog in terms of the state litigations. At one point when there was a litigation forum, it was reported that there's about 147 billion litigations against the state, which is a number that we also cannot confirm for the fact that the state attorney office does not have a record or a national register of litigations and claims against the state. When we requested this, the state attorney office could not make it available to us. So far, in terms of the settled cases, we noted that there's about 4% if we just consider with this indicator that was presented. And this is relatively lower if the department continues or the state attorney office continues in this trajectory. It's going to take a while longer to be able to finalize matters of litigation, but this continues to potentially expose government to unnecessary payments as people or litigations continue to not be managed in the manner as they should. On the next slide, we have matters relating to general collect. Oh, sorry. So on the next slide, we have the Office of the Chief Justice, whereby we noted that upon resignation of the CFO and two other officials on the 31st of May 2022, the media articles and as well as the resignation of these officials brought to light some procurement risks relating to a company that was established post an award that was made to a service provider relating to certain systems that are used for court processes. And also another different award whereby an official was involved in designing the bid specifications as well as the other stages of evaluation. And then this particular award was made to a company where this particular official had an interest. Upon obtaining these developments, the Office of the Auditor General then took a decision to call upon our colleagues from the investigations unit with a particular intention to say, would this be necessarily identified through the normal audit processes or not? And our observation and findings on this review process, we identified that ASITA was not involved in the procurement process, even though this was a procurement of IT goods and services. And also the condition for subcontracting was not indicated or specified in the initial bid documents and the tender invitations. However, subsequently, when these officials resigned, they were then awarded a subcontract which amounts to 50% of the value of the award in total. And they also, this particular tender was not advertised for the minimum number of 21 days, and the deviation was approved even though it was practical to invite competitive bids. So in the main, this is our message to the portfolio with regards to the Office of the Chief Justice. Moving to the next slide, Chairperson, it talks to the issue of the funding model within the Special Investigating Unit. Chairperson, in the five-year strategic plan of the Special Investigating Unit, it's indicated that there's an intention to develop and obtain approval of a new funding model in conjunction with the National Treasurer. However, this is something that has not been realized, and our recent updates and information that we obtained on this process was that the National Treasury recommended that the Special Investigating Unit must continue using its current funding model. While this is the case, there continues to be a challenge in terms of the debtors collection within the institution. And this is concerning to us in terms of ensuring that SIU still has the capacity to do the investigations while they rely on their own funds, since the government institutions are not necessarily paying for the services that they receive in terms of investigations. There are top 10 contributors on this issue of the debtors that are growing. And unfortunately, you will note that the Department of Justice is one of those institutions that contribute to almost 50% of this debtors balance, that being part of the top 10 are contributors. On the next slide, Chairperson, we are highlighting that the Special Investigating Unit also has a challenge when it comes to the issue of remedial actions, as they do not have powers to be able to enforce remedial actions. So we perhaps recommend that this is something that should be checked and reported to Parliament so that then Parliament can assist SIU to ensure that there's implementation and progress in terms of enforcement and implementation of the remedial actions that come from the reports which they produce and the recommendations that they make in terms of ensuring that there's consequence management by state institutions for wrongdoing by officials, suppliers, and other stakeholders. Moving to the next slide, this is also an area where we are highlighting, Chairperson, that the Special Investigating Unit is doing well in terms of its performance targets and achievements. However, there's also a concern with regards to some aging proclamations whereby about 26% is sitting in the category of 3 to 5 years. So perhaps there's a need for the institution to consider to design a system whereby they categorize cases based on their difficulty and nature and also indicate how long it takes so that those that can relatively be addressed with ease and shorter period of time can then be prioritized and closed so that the much needed attention can be given to the complex and difficult cases that remain in their system for longer periods. Moving to the next slide, we have the Office of the Public Protector South Africa in the main within the office.
5 minutes.
Okay, thank you. In the main, within the Office of the Public Protector South Africa, we're noting that it is not their mandate to necessarily track that remedial actions are being implemented. However, this institution took a decision to establish a monitoring unit within the Public Protector South Africa. And however, because of capacity constraints, they've been struggling to track and monitor implementation of these remedial actions. We have, however, noted that in the year 2022-23 planning documents, there's an indicator which seeks to report to Parliament in terms of the progress and status of implementation of remedial actions, which is commendable considering that the portfolio committees in the Parliament can then assist the Public Protector South Africa to ensure that the implementation of remedial actions is being monitored and tracked and implemented timeously as recommended in the reports produced by the investigating team within the Public Protector South Africa. Chairperson, I have come to the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ma'am Mantiane. Members, are there any questions? I have Honorable Horn, Honorable Swartz, Honorable Yako, Honorable Nibot, Druchens, in that order. Honorable Horn?
Yes, thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I just have two clarity-seeking questions, Chair. Having noted that, of course, as the AG have indicated, some of the issues regarding financial management would hopefully be arrested and reversed given the fact that there's now a CFO, the last year's presentation made specific mention of the consequences of poor or really a lack of proper contract management on the part of the Department of Justice. I don't know whether the Auditor General can share with us whether they interrogated this issue this year and what the outcome is. And then my second clarity-seeking question is around the irregular expenditure. In the past, we as a committee have unfortunately been faced with the situation that the Auditor General comes at the beginning of the BRRR engagements, present like today that there was just short of R1 billion of irregular expenditure on the part of the Department of Justice, and if I understood it correctly, it had to do with security contracts. And then when the department comes, they sometimes, not always, say yes, but the context is that this is now a recurrence of payments in respect of awards made in prior financial years, and therefore there's now mitigating circumstances in that they're still busy investigating this, and as a consequence they're under an obligation to pay, and as a consequence we must not see this as a regression in the way that awards are made and a regression in respect of irregular expenditure. So I just want clarity around whether this is in fact then a new form of irregular expenditure. In the previous two financial years, there were 573 million and 414 million rand respectively. So if we can just get information from the Auditor General as to whether this is in fact based on an award and when the specific award was made. And then secondly, in relation to that, whether the Auditor General can apprise us as to whether this specific award is then the one that ultimately led to the intended disciplinary action against the then CFO, Ms. Rousseau, and her ultimate resignation, and whether the Auditor General in any way or form looked into the whole circumstances around that in determining this to be irregular expenditure. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Horn, Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the AG's office for the presentation. It is greatly appreciated and will help us definitely in engaging with the various entities, with the department as is intended. Chair, I want to just raise a few general issues. Obviously, the issue of the regression of the OCJ is a very sad issue and it's regrettable, but we will deal with that in due course. I wanted to ask the issue relating to what he said in one of the slides, and that is a general finding about the portfolio. The portfolio has not adequately implemented the action plans developed to respond to non-compliance findings raised in prior years. That's the general view looking at all these issues. And then, of course, we've got the particular non-compliance procurement of the OCJ of 428.7 million. I'm not sure, maybe the AG can highlight whether in the recommendations part, and we appreciate this, is as at April, end of the financial year, is this recommendation or this finding sufficiently addressed in its recommendations is to deal with this, because this is an ongoing issue. Every year one has this or has a comment similar to this, not adequately implemented action plans developed to respond to non-compliance. Secondly, the issue of the irregular expenditure raised by Mr. Horn is an issue I want to raise as well. Almost, it's 966 million, which is a massive concern, but that's not the end of the picture, because there's a note there that also indicates that for the previous the two previous financial years, 20 and 21, there's one auditee still outstanding, and can I have clarity? Is that one outstanding auditee the amount of 999 million, which is still outstanding? So in other words, the irregular expenditure, that assessment is not complete. It could be increased by another double or 999 million, given that that irregular expenditure audit has not been completed, and that goes back 2 years, and then 1 year ago, 2021-22, there are two auditees that are outstanding. I think the figure was it 49 million? But the substantial figure is at 999 million going back 2 years. Chair, the broader issues about the usefulness of the reports by the department, by the entity to the Auditor General raise concerns, because what the Auditor General is saying is there are questions about the usefulness and reliability as to whether what is being told to AG when it comes to performance delivery, and then one can assume possibly told to us, whether the usefulness and reliability, what the Auditor General says, do not directly impact service delivery. So there are questions about that. There are questions that we'd have to raise with the SA Human Rights Commission. In the absence of supporting evidence, the service delivery to citizens is unknown. Then, Chair, obviously the issues relating to K table theft are very important. These are specific issues, but I think what the Auditor General is doing is really helping us when we engage with these departments, knowing and linked to that is the NPA indicators that are not measuring the rate of success in prosecution of crimes. We know cable theft is massive, but when you see the success rates here, there's something that is disjunctive. And that then links to the issue that the integrated justice system has not been realized. Particularly SAPS, Home Affairs, Correctional Services, there's a delay in finalizing the system. So we do not have a full picture. We do not have the number of cases that are opened linked to the number of cases that are withdrawn, prosecuted, and conviction. Until we get that integrated justice system, it's very difficult for the AG and ourselves to evaluate all these issues. So, Chair, I appreciate the input. I appreciate the comments about the Solicitor General. There's one issue there that is massively concerning, and that is that there does not seem to be any national record about all the litigation that is engaged with by the state. The Auditor General indicates an estimated figure of $147 billion that is claims against the state. But it must be deeply concerning, and I appreciate the recommendation of historical manual recording so that we've got an idea. For example, we know the Road Accident Fund is a massive contingent liability to the state. It could be similarly here that we don't even know what the figure is, and that can have an impact on national finances. So, Chair, I'll leave it at that. We will engage more specifically with the department and entities, but I just want to repeat my thanks at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart, Honorable Iago.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think mine is not more of a question rather than a comment. I see that there's a general theme of procurement processes being used as a tool almost for corruption. And it's been highlighted again with the Office of Department of Justice and the COJ to an extent where there is an official that has been identified who is complicit. And I'd like to know what is the way forward with regards to that official, if we know that there is an official who's complicit in a procurement deviation and complicit in it. That means that something needs to happen around that. And secondly, during our oversight, we did highlight extensively how we were concerned with the systems that are put in place, especially with a department that centers itself around record keeping. And we said that we have an issue with how it's happening and that it's almost very manual instead of being electronic, I mean, at a time where anything can be tampered with. And I see that is highlighted by the AG at the moment. And also, lastly, the issue of vacancies, because we're always going to lament about vacancies. However, if we don't fill those vacancies, we're going to sit with another 2 or 3 years of new people or new workforce who doesn't understand what is required from them. Then we must sit with the historical issues that we must then each and every year address, which then defeats the purpose of ironing out and clearing out, any kind of findings that we may find, especially in a respected department such as the Department of Justice. So I would want to suggest, Chair, that we sit as a committee perhaps and we say we want to then take this and monitor it on a specific timeline to see how far. In a way, because it seems like we're always going to report on the same things each and every single year, because as soon as the AG reports, we make recommendations. However, they remain as they are and the system stays as it is. It's maintained as it is and nothing seems to change, because I don't think they feel that we are understanding the implications of what should happen should we sit with the Department of Justice that is not functioning, that has audit findings. It leaves a lot of trust from even the general society at large, to not trust us as overseers of what they're supposed to do. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Yako. Honorable Nibot, Jochen.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation from the AG with regard to this. I just have two questions. the AG keeps bringing up the record keeping challenges with and the challenges with regards to record keeping. Now, I want to ask, from the AG's perspective, the challenges with record keeping, for is it because of a lack of skill or is it because of a lack of training on how to do proper record keeping? What would the AG's perspective be on that? Can the AG then also assist the department to ensure that every entity, as they've mentioned, does do proper record keeping? And then secondly, I wanted to ask about the internal audit committee. Now, I want to know, is the AG satisfied with the skills and capabilities within the internal audit committee for them to keep their entities on track? So is the AG satisfied, and does the AG then also meet with the internal audit committee of the entities, as they mentioned, like the Department of Justice, Legal Aid South Africa, and the SIU, and the other one was the South African Human Rights Commission? Does the AG sit with them to explain to them what the challenges are? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Neuwoestrogen, Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, and good morning to everybody. I'm largely covered by Honorable Horn and Honorable Swart, but I would like to know if the Auditor General can help with this measuring of conviction rates in percentages. I find that problematic.
Sorry, Honorable Breitenbach. Can the Secretariat just unpin Wilma? Thanks.
Sorry, Honorable Breitenbach, please proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. So I find the measurement of success rates in percentages very difficult to gauge. If you have a 70% success rate, or 100%, let's say you have 100% success rate in prosecuting certain offences, and you've only prosecuted one case and you won it, that's 100%. That's 100% success rate. It looks very good on paper, but for me it's meaningless because I don't know. It's a lot like, you know, when children go to school, X amount of children enter the school system. And along the way, X amount drop out and only X amount matriculate. So, you know, we have X amount of criminal matters entering the system as cases being investigated by the police. Then X amount of matters being enrolled by the National Prosecuting Authority. And then a whole lot of them just disappear in that system, as we all know. And then you get a conviction rate of 70% or 84% or 92%. But it means nothing because you don't know what happened between the case entering the system and the end. And what if we're going to exercise proper oversight, we need to understand what happens between investigation, enrollment, and then a conviction at the end of a matter. And I find these percentages very unhelpful. So if the Auditor General could just perhaps help me with that. And then there's the matter of the Office of the Chief Justice that they touched on. And I'm not sure what information the Auditor General looks at or how deeply they delved into the matter that was in the news and the three people who resigned and the subsequent or the awarding of that tender. But I'm given to understand fairly reliably that all is not as it seems and that what is available in the press is not necessarily 100% correct. And I just wonder how deeply they did look into that matter and if they can shed any light on that issue. Because the matter is a topical matter, it's an important matter, and we need to get to the bottom of it. So I wondered if they could just elucidate on that matter somewhat. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Breitenbach. Honorable Yako, is this the old hand or a new hand?
Sorry, Chase, an old hand.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, I have one issue to raise. Is with respect to this issue of value of briefs. I think it's related to what Honorable Breitenbach has raised, this issue of percentages. You always have a problem. You have 82% and 83%, which is well and good, very good, of briefs going to previously disadvantaged individuals. But when you go to the ground, the reality is not the same. It's not true. In fact, I'm not sure when you say you are auditing this, what are you actually auditing? Because some would say that you would have Ms. Advocate Yuli Sayako, who will get a brief to go to court for, let's say, for 2 days or for 1 day. And then you have Honorable Glynis Breitenbach getting a brief of a 5 million rand. Now you can have Honorable Yako, Honorable Dola, Honorable getting those briefs, but what is the quality of those briefs? Have you delved into that? Because when we go to either the JSC or we engage with legal bodies, they are seriously disputing the fact that that they are being briefed for quality matters that would assist them to hone their skills properly. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to attempt to respond to some of the questions and then also invite some of my colleagues to assist me with the responses. So on the matter of issues relating to contract management review is part of our standard audit procedures which we perform with each cycle, and these were performed for the year 2021-22. However, in the department, there were no material issues that were reported with regards to that specific focus area for the year under review. In terms of the irregular expenditure of about 854 million that was reported in the 21-22 cycle, I did indicate, Chairperson, that this relates to an old security contract that has since expired, and these payments were made in the prior year. However, this was reported for the first time in the department's records because the investigation process only concluded that this is a non-compliance and the basis under which it was concluded in the year under review. So it does relate to the prior year payments and prior year non-compliances. It does not relate to the matter which resulted to the former CFO being put on suspension and the disciplinary processes that unfolded as a result of that. Moving to the next question relating to compliance as well as our recommendations. Chairperson, it's going to be imperative that the portfolio drives the issue of implementation of consequence management, because without that those principles being employed, then it sends a message to the portfolio that perhaps the issues of non-compliance are not so much opposed, which is not necessarily the message the portfolio wants to send out, as officials are not going to take it seriously that non-compliance is something that is not tolerable within the portfolio, and as such, they must refrain from incurring this non-compliance. Second to that, Chairperson, is the fact that within the department, there's still no procurement framework. And without this area being addressed as a matter of agency, it's going to be difficult for the portfolio to do away with non-compliances. It is now become a general acceptable issue that there's non-compliances with procurement as a result of this issue of the procurement framework. I understand that from the engagement we've had with the department, there is a discussion with the National Treasury. Perhaps there might be a panel of legal service providers that will then be put together through the assistance of the National Treasury. We don't know at this stage, but that is the feedback that we received when we engaged with the department. And also the issue of vacancies in the case of the South African Human Rights Commission also needs to be addressed to adequately respond to the instances of non-compliance, because our understanding is that the current financial manager is acting as the CFO, and that's created a gap in the systems that are put in place to ensure that there's adequate compliance with supply chain management, as there's a step or there's a level which is not available in terms of the operations and the day-to-day running, which include review of procurement requests, the review of procurement documents to ensure that they are compliant with the supply chain management regulations. So this put together and also our recommendations to address issues of consequence management, when they are addressed, this should then assist the portfolio to move forward in terms of the compliance subject matters. And also, if we address procurement management, that will also address the issue of irregular expenditure, as well as also if the portfolio is able to produce credible financial statements, that's also going to address another area of compliance management. So all this put together, they need to be addressed, and then the portfolio can move in a direction where compliance can then be something that is put in the past, and the department is compliant in all the decisions that are being made and taken. In terms of the 9.9 million which we reported from the 2020-21 cycle, that is a comparison, Honorable Chairperson, whereby we are indicating that in 2020-21, the irregular expenditure that was reported under assessment was 9.9 million, which is around 10 million, while in the current year it's 49.7 million, and that is largely attributable to the department. It's not to say the amount that was presented in 2020-21 has not been dealt with. We're just indicating the trend that in the prior year, the amount which was under assessment was 9.9 million, while in the current year, it's 49.7 million. Moving to the question around the Office of the Chief Justice allegations and issues. So as the office, our response was to review those contracts using the procurement procedures to understand if there's any non-compliance that we are going to obtain in the form of the non-compliances and issues that we identified. However, we did not do a detailed investigation. That is something which the department is still addressing. And so far, our knowledge is that the department has halted those contracts and no payments are being made in those contracts prior to the conclusion and finalization of the investigation processes, so that then whatever comes out of those investigations will also consider in the next cycle when we perform the audit processes and we then report accordingly. In terms of the issues around record keeping, record keeping mostly was challenging in the area of performance reporting, and perhaps the levels that are meant to review are not necessarily doing so timeously and in the detailed rigor which is required. Because it's just a matter of checking if the information agrees to the next record and if the details that are captured are actually supported by substantial evidence. So I can't categorically say it's a lack of skill or it's the lack of the know-how, but perhaps this is something that is not done effectively and timelessly with us people being under pressure. So there needs to be an intentional exercise to ensure that every quarter, when quarterly reports are being produced, they are verified at that stage. It's not something that is left when there's consolidation processes at the end for annual performance reporting. This is something that needs to take place on a day-to-day basis so that credible reporting can then be achieved come end of the year where the annual performance report has to be submitted officially. In terms of percentage performance indicators that are measured in percentages, Chairperson, you'll recall that we did indicate that in our observation, and also what is challenging with these indicators is that they focus on matters that are finalized in the current year without reflecting on the backlogs, without reflecting on the applications that are received, or without reflecting on the cases that are currently sitting on the system in the case of convicted cases. Because the convicted cases will focus on what has been prosecuted and finalized, but not so much what is currently sitting under the investigation. So these are good indicators to assist the department to show the success rates and the losses, but there are other indicators that need to be brought in to also reflect on matters that are currently sitting in the archives of the department. And this is an area which we've already highlighted and brought to the attention of this committee, because it is also concerning in our case as well. The issue of the value of briefs, so far at Chebesin, we just looked at the number of persons. So the target in terms of the numbers was 41%. But when we looked at the actual value, then that was 29%. But we have not then gone into detail in terms of the quality of these briefs and whether these are briefs that are positioned in a manner that is going to assist this professional to move to the next level. I understand that there's a policy within the department that deals with the processes and the systems that are meant to assist legal professionals to transition from junior counsel to senior counsel and so forth. This is one of the policies that was reported and tracked in the year 21-22. But this is something perhaps we'll consider going into detail to review in the next cycle to understand whether these are quality briefs that enable these officials and professionals to then be able to build their resumes and their businesses going forward based on the experiences that they would have received through the briefs that are allocated to them by the department. Chebesin, I'll invite my colleague Lelani, who dealt with the audit of the Office of the Chief Justice, in case there's something she wants to add. And I believe I've addressed all the questions that were directed to me, unless I've missed something. Thank you, Chebesin.
No, thank you very much. Please address this issue of value of brief. It's a very thorny issue. It's quite urgent. Please address it as a matter of urgency.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson. Morning, members. I will just deal with the issues that was raised in terms of the Office of the Chief Justice. In terms of the comment on the identified officials, yes, the officials have been identified, and then the Office of the Chief Justice is currently busy with the investigation. So they will be in a position then to give you feedback on the progress that they have made since they started with the investigation. Then, just also to highlight the findings that we, after the media article, we did specifically go and look at the contact in that was mentioned in the media article, and then there was two findings that we identified. One was on the CITA not being used for the IT procurement as required by the CITA Act, as well as then there was another finding to say that the terms of reference that was advertised when the tender was advertised did not include subcontracting as a requirement. So that was the two material findings that we identified during the audit process. So, and like I then indicated, the department is now busy with the investigation, so we're awaiting the outcome. And in terms of the question on the internal audit and the reliance on and if we identify any issues with regards to the skills, we haven't identified any issues with the internal audit work on most of the internal audit departments. We have noted that they are doing what they're required to do. We also do meet as part of our annual process of audit. We do meet with the internal auditors to discuss on ways that areas where there's concerns, as well as then how we can maybe rely on the work that they've been doing as part of their processes. So there is definitely interactions between ourselves and the internal audit units. So I think that this is all that I wanted to contribute to. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Is there any member of your team who would want to say something?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I just want to add that perhaps we would appreciate an investigation in the future to brief the committee on the detailed feedback that based on the work that we've done on the audit of the integrated justice system. That was just a snippet of what we've obtained so far, but there is more information that is available that we can use to brief the committee, should there be an appetite to receive such information. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think in the program for this term, there is a slot for the integrated justice system, but the secretariat will communicate with yourselves, and maybe you can use that slot in addition to what we'll be dealing with to receive a briefing from yourselves.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. No, I think this briefing was very fruitful. I think we are well armed to meet with the departments and entities reporting to the portfolio committees. I think it was a very good start for the annual performance report to receive this report. I think it was quite detailed, and it has really armed us. We'd love to thank the Office of the AG for the good work done. We really appreciate this report, but I think it would be important that, especially with correctional services, even with justice, where they have made a promise that they are investigating, to do what Honorable Yako is suggesting, that they must give you their project plan of the investigations, which should also be launched with us, so that at the end of the financial year, you are able to measure them against what they have given you, because also we do not want to have endless investigations. Taxpayers' monies are being used to do these investigations. They might not be exact, but you need time frames so that we ensure that there is consequence management. Lack of consequence management is eroding the moral fabric of our society. And we are really concerned that every time, whether it's the Auditor General, whether it's the departments themselves, this issue of lack of consequence management always comes up. Because I think if you can address the issue of consequence management, I'm talking to us as a country, if we can address the issue of consequence management, half of the battle would be won. So I think that it's important that we should all focus on this issue of consequence management. People, they must know that they're going to be caught if they do something wrong. They're going to be caught and they're going to be dealt with. Because sometimes even if you have harsher sentences on paper, but if people, they know that there is no appetite or they're not going to be caught, those harsher sentences are just on paper. So I think we should really focus on this issue of consequence management. Now, thank you very much, Office of the Auditor General. Members, I suggest that we have a 15-minute break, and then we start with the Legal Aid South Africa. Can we come back at 2:15?
Chairperson?
Yes, Mr. Romano?
If I don't know if Legal Aid will be ready at 2:15, we had agreed with them to start at 12, but I'll try and check them.
To start at 12?
Yeah.
Okay. So there will be no problem if we start at 12, so we should take this more or less as a lunch break. Then we start at 12 with Legal Aid, and then we go to Information Regulator. Will that be in order, members?
In order, Chair.
That's perfectly fine. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let's adjourn until 12. Everybody, especially...
Recording members, in progress.
Members of the Legal Aid Board South Africa, who is leading a team from the Legal Board, Legal Aid South Africa?
Thank you, Mr. Manganeshe. Makwine, Chairperson of Legal Aid Board. I'm here.
good day, Judge Makume. How are you?
I'm well, and yourself, sir.
No, thank you very much. You're welcome. Can you make opening remarks, which will be followed by a presentation that must take not more than 45 minutes?
Thank you very much, Mr. Mawanisha. Honourable members, may I firstly just introduce that I'm also with board members. I was expecting Mr. Lisailan, I think he was in earlier on, a board member and chairperson of REMCO. And then our CEO, Ms. Mantiti Kola, is unfortunately not able to be with us. She's engaged somewhere else. I then have Mr. Patrick Kundermark, who's a board member and an executive board member who leads the legal aspect of our. He'll also be doing some presentation. I have been asked, Patrick, if you could just go through to the slides. Patrick, can you see me? Patrick, can you just... thank you very much. Honourable members, this is our performance report for the year 2021-2022. You would notice that we're saying that despite COVID-related issues that have been hampering all operations, we have been able to achieve 84% of our predetermined objectives. You'll also notice from our report that we have, this is the 14th time that we have received clean audit outcomes. Then also, it was a pleasure for also us to also let you know that for the 21st year in succession, we have received unqualified audit opinion. Now, I'm not the one to tell you what is the difference between an audit opinion and audit outcome, but be that as may, I think it just says that you guys are keeping clean records, nothing hidden. And then also, to our pride also, for the 13th year in succession, we have been the top employer. And also, I think it's also worth mentioning, Chairperson and honorable members, that we have, as we informed you last year, kick-started our new mandate that we received from Portfolio Committee, where we've taken over the land claims issues. We're just eagerly waiting for the appointment to the land court to start working. Now, you also, please, can you get, Patrick, can you go to slide 5? Just search. Yeah. Slide 5 and 6. Are you there, Patrick? Yes. Legal service delivery, you will notice that in the year under review, we have also managed to deal with almost 11,686 child assistance matters. And as regards our human resource recruitment, that has been hampered by a number of issues. One of them is the issue around budget cuts. And also the fact that we have to make sure that the new mandate that we've received also receives preference from ourselves. That in a nutshell is deals with our performance overview. I think the acting NOE, which is I think Patrick. He will take you through the service delivery issues. Patrick?
Chair, it would be Paul Harvey, who's acting in OE, and she will do slides 8 to 12, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Paul, please come in.
I'll be dealing with slide 8 until slide 12. Patrick, can you show slide 8? I'm going to deal with the performance overview on legal services delivery. And legal services delivery, we managed to be able to complete about 314,998 matters, which are criminal matters. For civil matters, it was 40,143 matters. And we also provided legal aid to people and in 2021-2022, and it was about 487 people, 552. About 132,411 people were provided with legal advice. And the split between the criminal and legal was and civil legal aid was about 89% and 11%. Civil accounted to 11% and criminal accounted to 89%. The new legal aid matters that we took in, as we say, were 355,141. And local offices managed to do about 342 matters, 031, which was the bulk of the matters. Only about less than 5% was taken by the judicare, cooperation agreements, as well as agency agreement. We also had strategic litigation matters, which accounted to about 19 matters. And these are our class actions as well as our constitutional issues cases. For criminal and civil, the split is shown in the next picture. It was about 360,655, which is slightly more than the new matters. And local offices also in this area, they managed to finalize more matters than our judicare cooperation and agency agreements and strategic litigation. So our mixed model delivery system is still working, but our local offices are taking more matters. For legal advice also, we also had local offices taking about 94,490. The advice line took about 29,119, and our remand detainee paralegals worked on about 8,873 matters. All our courses were covered, including our specialized criminal courts, which are child justice courts, sexual offenses courts, as well as commercial crimes courts. And we also used the mixed model delivery system for all of them, because in case of conflict, then we utilize our judicare and other ways of delivery. Court coverage for district court, our target was 80%, but we managed to complete, to do court coverage of about 84%. For regional courts, the target was 90%. We were a little bit below the target at 81%. And the reasons attributed to this was COVID lockdown and other issues where some of some of the parts in the country, the crime rate went a little bit down. For high courts, we represented all matters that were requiring legal aid. Our planned court coverage in the district court was about 87.6% and regional court 94.4%. The high courts, as we said, we represent the clients in all matters that require legal aid. Civil legal aid services, including legal advice, was impacted by regulations, directions, and directives issued to curb the spread of COVID-19. The proportion of the new civil matters has increased by 2% from the previous financial year to 11% in 2021-2022. And in children's matters for 2021-2022, we assisted 11,686, 6,935 that is 59% being children in conflict with the law, about 4,751, which is 41%, being children involved in civil matters. The legal advice line reverted to operating in full capacity in quarter three, contributing to an increase in provision of legal services. And our strategic litigation matter success rate was about 93%, whereby we finalized about 13 matters with an outcome, and 12 had a positive outcome and one had a negative outcome. Our quality monitoring and intervention program is still in place. We have training programs. We have legal research and support programs, mentorship, supervision, access to electronic libraries, and quality assessment conducted by Legal Quality Assurance Unit, which is independent from us. Our file assessments, we achieved the targets that we set for ourselves. Client feedback showed that it was negatively impacted by the legal advice line not fully operating, because our legal advice line is the one that gets feedback from the clients. But as in from quarter four, the overall satisfaction level of in the civil was about 73%, and in the criminal matters it was about 94%. We used the social media platforms, meaning the website, including the website, so that we can be able to assist as more clients as we can, because that was the only way of communication that we could use during COVID. Thank you. I think the next slide would be for finance. Thank you.
Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Ntswalo. I will be taking you through our financial performance. We can move to the next slide. So in terms of our budget, we managed to spend 95% of our budget. And we also managed, from a compliance point of view, to decrease our irregular expenditure by 27% year on year. And, you know, we also achieved the 14th clean audit, and it's the 21st unqualified audit opinion. And in complying with the 30 days legislative requirement, we have managed to pay our creditors and judicare 99.1%. So the other ones that we were not able to pay might be because of some queries that needed to be resolved, but we do manage to pay our creditors on time. And in terms of our budget, we had an allocation of 2.022 billion. And as indicated, we managed to spend 95% of our budget. And our savings that we've realized is because we have put quite cost containment measures in place, and only really spent when we absolutely need to spend on funding. And the budget, if we look at our MTF, it was reduced by 15%, looking at the MTF 2021 to 2025. And this was then for us to reduce our COE by 125 million and our goods and services by 227 million. But we did manage to absorb the decrease because of the stringent cost containment measures that we implemented. Then from the 1st of January 2022, we took over the land rights management function from the Department of Agriculture. And in the prior year, we had requested for 24 million from our retention of surplus to assist us in the establishment of the unit. But we also then received a 33 million from the Department of Agriculture on the 1st of April. That was then to fund the fourth quarter of the land rights management matters. And as indicated, that we did manage to pay our creditors, most of our creditors within the 30 days timeline. Can move to the next slide. And in terms of SCM, we have managed to decrease our irregular expenditure by 27%. We did though have irregular expenditure of 1.2 million that we incurred. I think it is right to also confirm that we have put consequence management, for those instances where there was irregular expenditure, because the organization has zero tolerance for non-compliance. And in terms of irregular expenditure, just to drill down, the catalyst was, the contract, the cleaning variations, where because of the COVID-19, we adopted a two teams approach that then necessitated that we have additional cleaners on site. And some of the contracts were not varied on time, and that was the reason why we had irregular expenditure. And also another reason why we would also have not spent all our funding was because of the moratorium that the National Treasury placed on procurement from the 16th of February in 2022, because of the Constitutional Court judgment. So we had to put aside all the procurement that we needed to finalize by the 31st of March, that we have then subsequently applied through the retention of surplus process, which has been approved by National Treasury. And we, from 2021 February, we implemented, we established the internal control function within the finance unit, which then allows the organization to look at control improvements, to look at the internal control deficiencies that are identified during the audit process, and ensuring that we don't have repeat findings. So that team ensures that we look at compliance, we look at policies and alignment to legislation, and also follows up on the irregular process and wasteful expenditure that has been identified and the consequence management that follows from there. And I think in general, it is worth noting that in the financial year 2021-22, the Auditor General did audit us based on material irregularity because of our irregular expenditure, and they found that we are compliant and that we have applied the regulations and legislation that we should have applied, and we have taken consequence management very seriously. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Chairperson of the Board, and then Chairperson of REMSEC. My name is Topo, COO of Legal Aid. Thank you for affording us the opportunity to present the performance information. I'll cover human resource and governance section of the performance information. We do have 246 staff members, Chair. And then, however, it is lower than what we have in our staff establishment, and the reason has been alluded to earlier. And then out of this 246, 1,907 is staff, the legal staff. That means the people who are providing our core services. And then 561 is for support. We had planned our recruitment at 95%, but however, we achieved 91.8%. One of the reasons is we were very cautious in filling for the position because of budget cuts.
And also because of COVID-19, some of our services, we experienced a reduction in some of our services, and therefore we were matching our resources with our demand. In terms of the EE, we had planned or targeted 91%, but the actual was 90.8%. So we were on target there. And then in terms of Africans, we were below target by 3%, and people with disability by 1%, as our, and by 0.4%, which because our target was 2%. And with regards to filling a senior management position, we were lower with blacks, and then the target was 91%, and then the actual was 80%. Africans target 79%, actual was 64%. There we were slightly significantly lower by around 25%. And with women, I think we did slightly better, as we were lower by 3%. Next slide, please. And in order to look after our employees and have a staff retention, we enhance our EVP elements. And we also did some satisfaction checking. And then we found that 82% of these employees were satisfied with the condition of services that they're working under. And then that also then translates to our staff turnover, which is 5.2%, and then which is below the normal target or the industry norm of 10%. So we are 50% lower. And the chairperson in his introduction has also indicated that we received 18 consecutive years as a top employer. And when we checked whether staff members wanted to stay and how many staff members wanted to stay, 79% indicated that they want to remain with us for the next 2 years. Next slide, please. All right, due to COVID-19, our training programs were mainly virtual, but we have seen that our staff members have adopted well with this virtual training platforms. And then, as I've already indicated, that we had an enhancement of EVP to retain our staff. We improved our group life, which now covers temporary disability, permanent disability, and critical illness. We increased our employee wellness and health and safety programs. And we also subsidized professional membership of our staff members. And also we have increased our bursary funding by 50%. And also we do assist with candidate attorneys PLT and board examinations with the fees. And it's not only fees, Chair, is we also have classes that we are offering on weekends to our candidate attorneys. Our internal engagement survey, as I've indicated, found that 82% of our employees are satisfied with the conditions we are offering. Then we move to governance. Next slide, please. With governance, we have submitted all our reports on time to the executive authority. And our board, we only, as at the end of the year, we only had one vacancy. So we had 13 out of 14 position filled. And the board managed to fulfill its responsibility amidst COVID-19 and budget cut, and to ensure that our finance performance, maturity, and then overall performance is sustained. In terms of risk enterprise, the board reviewed the risk, strategic risk, and also risk appetite and tolerance in light of the current situation. And then it also monitors through audit committee combined assurance activities. And combined assurance activity through the combined assurance forum reports directly to the audit committee on a quarterly basis. And with internal audit, they conducted assurance, and then their target was 95. However, they achieved even more than that, 95%, which was set. And we reviewed amendments submitted to DOJ for consideration in amendment of legal aid regulation and manuals. And this came into operation on the 6th of August 2021 and 8th May 2022, respectively. Next slide, please. And we had three portfolio briefings. And as I mentioned earlier, we had 13 members, board members out of 14 appointed. And then assurance, it's internal audit achieved more than the 95% target. It exceeded and then covered 100%. Fraud prevention and management matters were reported, and then these matters are monitored by a REMSEC committee for implementation and consequence management. And then 99% of our employees disclose their interest. And then during the external audit by Auditor General, there were no incidences that were detected that implied that there were people who were doing business with the organization. Next slide, please. Okay, then Patrick will deal with sustainability and the last part of our presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Good afternoon, Chair, Honourable Members, Chairperson of Legal Aid South Africa, and our Deputy Chair, as well as fellow board members and colleagues. I'll present on sustainability issues and then also take you to the conclusion, Chair. From a sustainability point of view, it's an essential element of our business strategy, and particularly from our side when we're looking at sustainability, is our stakeholder engagement. So if you will see, we linked to 101 community advice offices. In fact, we just received an updated list from CUASA, and there are now about 220 community advice offices that are members of CUASA. We also have links with about 918 non-governmental organizations, community-based organizations, and faith-based organizations, as well as traditional structures that our local offices link to, obviously to make our services known. And then over the year, we were involved in about 917 community outreach events. For us, overall, we have about 9 stakeholder clusters in our stakeholder universe. So we cluster our different stakeholders in terms of what we have in our strategic plan, to ensure that we engage with all our stakeholders and take into account any inputs they may have in terms of our services delivery and our strategic plan and our strategic direction. Chair, and then I will proceed to our concluding remarks. Obviously, our strategic plan 2020 until 2025 is focused on the fulfillment of our constitutional and legislative mandate, thereby assisting indigent and vulnerable South Africans to access justice. I think during this time frame, during COVID, we had to adapt how we attended to the service delivery to ensure that our clients could access us. There, our call center played a very critical role in linking our clients to us, particularly at stages where we had to limit access to our offices. The outlook for the future in terms of finances remains uncertain. But as Legal Aid South Africa, we are committed to managing our budget carefully, given the baseline reductions over the MTF period 2023 to 2025, as mentioned by the CFO, and obviously also ensuring the adequate funding of the new land mandate, which we commenced on the 1st of January 2022. So for us, our emphasis and our concentration will be placed and focused on the fulfillment of our strategic plan and our annual performance plan deliverables for 2022-2023, improving our internal delivery model with due regard to demand for legal representation in land-related matters, and particularly now with the rollout of our land units, where we will provide the legal representation on the same model that we use currently, which is then mostly via our own employees, and with a specific recruitment program now already in place to ensure that. Ensuring good governance and the management of the business is one of the things we've prided ourselves in as Legal Aid South Africa, and our audit comes as evidence to our commitment to this good governance and management of the business. And then repositioning the employment value proposition to maintain a values-based, high-performance, agile workplace. And I think, once again, our employees' commitment can be seen in terms of what we've achieved in terms of our audit outcomes, as well as the services that we've rendered to a substantial number of South Africans in terms of requiring access to justice. And then also assessing the impact of the current economic as well as socioeconomic challenges on our strategic objectives. Obviously, as our economy moves along, we notice a lot of unemployment, which also has an impact on us in service delivery. So we will always be assessing that impact on us, specifically on our strategic objectives. Chair, that is our presentation. I will hand back to our chairperson, Judge Makumi. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick, and thank you all other members of the executive committee. Tin Solomon Fuken, CEO of Stoffo. Thank you very much for that presentation. Chairperson, Mr. Monganish, and honorable members, that's our report. One of the things that I forgot to mention was with the new mandate on land claims, our legal executive on land matters, Mr. Tabiso, has been going around the country conducting trainings for aspirant lawyers who want to be involved in matters of land matters, especially lawyer organizations, the BLA, NADEL, and other structures. So for us, that is something that we're looking forward to increase judicare, that most of the lawyers should be involved. Then the last thing, I think we also are aware that Parliament is moving ahead with the traditional courts bill. We don't know what that will mean to us. Probably it will also mean that there will have to be some further training and then others. Thank you very much, and that's our report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson Judge Makume, and to your members of your team. I thought that it would be important that, Chairperson, you just brief us as the way of concluding the presentation on the intra-board disputes, because when we were going through the report, we picked up that there was an intra-board dispute which led to members of the board laying complaints against one another. If you can just conclude as to just take us into confidence as to what were those issues.
Thank you. Chairperson, there were quite, you know, this was a new board which took office in 2019. And there were new members and old members in the new board. Now, when we come from different, you know, positions, some people have a way of addressing each other at board meetings. When people don't agree with each other and they feel strong about an issue, there's a tendency of using a language that may not be acceptable to other people. Now, it was basically on how people addressed each other on points of differences. Two board members especially were continuously at loggerheads with each other. We tried to intervene, although it may not, as a board or as the chairperson, it may not have been so effective until it came to a head sometime in November 2021, when we had to a formal complaints were laid by one board member against the other that the language that was being used was not proper and that, that had to be dealt with. So, and then the second one was a member who appeared virtual at a committee meeting under circumstances which were not acceptable. And that complaint was also brought to our attention. As a result, those were the two matters which were then taken to a formal inquiry after the board decided that we should appoint an attorney, a firm, to investigate whether any of the board members, through their utterances, and or the other board member who appeared on screen under circumstances which were not acceptable to a meeting, should be sanctioned or not. The inquiries have been concluded. In respect of the one matter where the two board members were continuously at loggerheads with each other, a settlement was reached. I think the two members reconciled and accepted that there was no intention of belittling each other. I mean, the language was, in some instances, one member felt offended that it looks like every time he voices opinion of that the other member does not think that he is a fit and proper person to be one. So that matter was the two members had a discussion with each other and they resolved the issues and then undertook never not to again commit or do such things. So that one is over. The other matter, which was of a committee member who, as I indicated, appeared on screen under uncompromising circumstances. That matter is presently with the, in terms of the act, we could not even suspend. We asked the member not to attend meetings until such time the minister has involved us. We've given the minister the record of the hearing, and we're only waiting for the minister to tell us whether, because it's only the minister who can remove or suspend or do a board member. So we don't have that those powers. But that matter is still with the minister. He was given the report as far back as August or July, if I'm not wrong. So in fact, my intention was to give him a call sometime this week to find out what is the outcome. Yes. Chairperson, I think those were uncomfortable members as a board, met us as a board that engaged us for some time. It really nearly derailed us, but we were never derailed. The board managed to deal with all its matters effectively. But it's something that we don't want to see happening again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Judge Makube. I think that assists. Members, questions. I have Honorable Swart, Honorable Nieboot-Jochen, Honorable Horn, Honorable Petenbach, in that order. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the judge. Just a few comments. I appreciate your briefing on the intra-board issues. That is a pity. I think this is the first time that we're aware of that this type of situation has occurred. Obviously, there were costs incurred, and it's a pity that the two board members didn't reconcile earlier without the need of bringing in outside attorneys at some cost. And one does trust that this is a blemish on the board, sadly, that will hopefully be resolved and won't impact. The question is, did it impact any of the workings of the board whilst this was ongoing? And I presume so. But I trust that this matter will be resolved and look forward to the report from the minister in this regard. Secondly, I wanted to just touch on the issue of the Land Rights Management Unit. And a number, even in the previous parliament, I advocated that the issue of land rights should be moved to the Legal Aid Board from agriculture. And I welcome the fact, I just wanted to find out from you, given the fact that the Legal Aid Board has now taken over 740 matters, is there sufficient funding and capacity? I appreciate 24 million was taken from retention, that was within, and 33 million from the department. But last year's report, we were advised that you would need at least 114 million in the initial projected cost for this year. So there seems to be a budget shortfall. And how is that impacting on the much needed land rights management unit and the incredible work that we're expecting that unit to do to resolve the land issue, the very sensitive and emotional land issue in South Africa, partially to assist with that regard. Then just the broader budget issue relates to the reduction in the budget of 8.3%. Obviously, that will have an impact. In previous years, we've been, I think, Judge, you might have alerted to us and before your time, to the severe impact of this budget reduction. And I want to commend the board. I want to really commend and Legal Aid Board in general that you've improved, you've increased your legal assistance. 487,552 people have been assisted. That's a 31% increase, if our figures are correct. That is really commendable, given the fact that you've got a reduced budget. We need specifics. We have always opposed any reduction in Legal Aid's budget, given the good work that has been done. But I would like you to give us, practically, if it's possible, what will be the impact of ongoing budget reductions. The last issue relates to a concern that has been raised from Legal Aid practitioners relating to the transcription services, particularly when it comes to appeals from the department, the impact that has had on delaying matters, whether that has been resolved. The further issue, remand videos and correctional services, impacting on where they are not available, not working, impacting on remand detainees. Maybe you can ask someone to advise us how we can assist, because we don't want an increase in backlog of cases. We don't want an increase in remand detainees that are not able to appear on video to have their matters dealt with. Thank you so much, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart. Honorable Nivot Trochen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good afternoon to everyone, and thank you for the presentation, as well as the Chairperson of Legal Aid South Africa, these responses and brief. The question that the Chairperson asked with regard to the intra-board disputes, thank you for your response and your clarification with regards to that. But I did want to know, especially, you know, when we started with the virtual meetings and the online meetings, et cetera, and some organizations needed policies on how to conduct virtual meetings in terms of the background, the proper clothing to wear, and what you need to do for online meetings. So I just want to know, does both Legal Aid South Africa staff and the board have a policy, or will it be developed with regards to online meetings and how to have online meetings and conduct yourselves or themselves? Then secondly, the impact of COVID on delivery of legal services to persons. I know Legal Aid South Africa has also been impacted by COVID-19, the illnesses or the deaths. But in terms of services to the citizens, the legal services, I would like to know what the impact was in terms of that. Then to Legal Aid South Africa offices or satellite offices, which was affected by the riots in KwaZulu-Natal in July in 2021. I'm just curious whether there is any update with regard to those two offices. I'm not sure if it's satellite or offices or satellite offices. Have those offices been closed? Have they been moved? Have the records been found? Was the records damaged or lost? So I just wanted some updates in terms of that. And then we know that we have two avenues. People who are too poor to you know, get legal assistance for legal processes, and then also at the same time who don't necessarily qualify for legal aid assistance. Now, in terms of the statistics of people who are in the missing, you know, in the gap, you know, they don't qualify for legal aid, but they're too poor to afford their own legal aid services or legal services. What are the statistics in terms of those, that group of people? Then I see payments met within 30 days. I see it stated that 57%, and then there's another percentage. I'm curious what prevents legal aid from meeting the 100% requirement of paying for services within 30 days. And so I'm just curious what prevents them from achieving 100%. Then you were speaking about the staff turnover is 5.2%, but we do know that legal aid have been, you know, getting rewards or awards for Employee of the Year for many years. So now, is it, you know, that percentage, is it, what is the reason? Are they not satisfied with the salary or the working conditions, or have they, did they get better opportunities? So I'm just curious if you can answer that. Thank you so much, Chairperson, and can I please be unpinned?
Thank you very much, Honorable Newbert Trochan. Honorable Horn.
Yes, thanks, Chair. I have two issues to raise. The first is in respect of court coverage. I note from the annual report that in respect of district courts, the Legal Aid South Africa managed to maintain that percentage of around 84%. But in terms of representation afforded to those accused in our regional courts, that percentage has now slipped from a height of 97% in 2016-70 to only 81% in this financial year against the target of 90%. So firstly, I want to understand why the target has not been met, but secondly, and I think more importantly so, in previous annual reports, the assurance was always given that representation were afforded to those accused persons in the regional courts who required it or where the court required it. And this time around, I did not necessarily see that assurance. And given the fact that our regional courts typically deal with the more serious crimes, I think this is a bit of a concern. The second issue, Chair, I want to raise is in respect of the spending patterns. So I hear the explanation that 95% only of the reduced budget was spent because of the fear that the budget cuts would necessitate specifically staff positions not being filled. The difficulty from our perspective is, and I think the Honourable Swart has already referred, that we as a committee has come out strongly in previous budget review reports to say that we do not support budget cuts for Legal Aid South Africa, given the important work it's doing. The difficulty is that, of course, National Treasury will argue, but if you only spend 95% of the budget we give you, it would mean that there's room for further cuts. And in that sense, we must say to Legal Aid South Africa that it's making our job exceptionally difficult to motivate against further budget cuts if they manage to not achieve that benchmark of 98% at least in terms of spending. So this is a statement to them. They're welcome to react to this, but I think it's important for them to understand this, given the fact that we've stiffened our backs on their behalf in previous budget review reports. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Horn. Honourable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I've been covered by Honourable Swart and Honourable Horn. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Just a few issues on my side before you respond. In your report, I can see that the number of grievances have increased from 12 to 16. if we can be punished with the reasons that have led to such an increase. There is also the briefing of women, that it has taken too long to deal with the issue of briefing women lawyers, if we can respond to that. I think the two issues that were raised by Honorable Swart and Honorable Horn with respect to the inability to secure appeal records, I think also we will take the issue up with the Department of Justice, but I think we are free to further give us a context as to what is happening with respect to that. Over to you, Judge Magume, and to your team.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I will leave over to the executives to respond to most of the questions, but the only question that I think I can deal with is the question that was, or the concern raised by Honorable Swart about whether the inter-board
yes.
blames the board. Of course, it blames the board. I can try to say that the board was hurt by some of the ongoing disputes amongst board members. But I can assure you that despite that, it did not deter us from proceeding to reach solutions and conclusions. We feel bad about it, and we are the last people to, and I'm the last person to say everything was well. It was not well, Chairperson, but I think with the support of the CEO and management, we managed to weather the storm, and we managed to reach consensus on a number of issues despite that those things. And obviously, as Mr. Swart has said, this was not without a costly exercise. It was a costly exercise. And we regret that we had to go that way, to spend money on issues that could have been dealt with as adults. You know, in the beginning when this thing started, one kept on saying, please, gentlemen and ladies, and please can you be reminded that you have the right to differ, but please use the right language. And one thought that people will be adult enough. I mean, most of them are experienced board members from other committees and institutions, and you expect that people should carry themselves in a particular way. But as I said, this was a new board. You know, it's like when you build a house, after a year or two, you normally say that there are settling in a contract, that the foundation starts cracking and then you've got to settle in. So this board was in the process of settling in. And one of the issues that I think happened, which also was part of issues that were brought to the fore, shortly after our new CEO took over, because remember the board, an old board went out and the new board went in, and simultaneously with that, a CEO who had been serving for more than 16 years also had to retire. So there was a new board and a new CEO. And you know, when the new head of the family, a new principal comes in, there are issues that come up. So. And as a result, during that year, after our CEO got in, we lost two senior executive members. And people started saying, doubting whether the CEO is the one who's the cause of their people resigning as senior people. And those were some of the issues that, you know, translated into disputes. People were blaming each other that so-and-so and so-and-so. So, it was those things that really cost us a lot of problems, and we regret that we had to go through that. Thank you. I think I can only respond to that. And the other issues, the land rights issues matter. I think the COO and Patrick will respond to that. Question about COVID and service delivery impact, I think Patrick will deal with that, and the COO, the offices issue in KZN, the CEO, I think, will let us know. And there was also a question about the means-tests and qualifications and the gap, what you do. Patrick will deal with that. And the issue about payment, 30 days, the CFO will deal with that. The staff turnover, 5%, I think the COO will deal with that. Then there were questions by Honorable Horn about court coverage, why we have not been able to deal, get to the target of 90%, why not met. And also, I think coupled with that is the issue of the spending patterns. We've been asked if we are not reaching about 95%, we're making it difficult for this committee to, you know, to speak, to argue on our behalf that there should not be budget cuts. I think COO will deal with that. The issue of the briefing patterns of women, Patrick could deal with that, and the issue of the appeal record, I think Patrick also will deal with that. Yes. Let's start with you, Patrick. Are you able to respond to some of the questions that deal directly with your department? Patrick? Patrick, are you there?
I'm here, Judge. Sorry, just took a bit of time to unmute. I think, Judge, a lot of the matters coming through could also be dealt with by the acting National Operations Executive because it falls under criminal services delivery. I think on the land rights management issue, whether there's sufficient money and capacity for this unit, I think the legal executive, Mr. Tabiso Mbenze, is with us. We have briefed the joint portfolio committees of agriculture as well as employment and labor. I don't know, Tabiso, if you want to deal with that one.
Okay, thank you, Patrick. Good afternoon, committee members. Good afternoon, board members. Good afternoon, colleagues. With regard to the land rights management facility, the land rights management unit, there'll be a shortfall because with regard to MTF 2022-2023, there's a commitment for about 89 million. So there'll be a shortfall of 28,889,000. With regard to 2023-2024, there's a commitment for 76 million. 2024-2025, there's also a commitment for 80 million. So there'll also be a shortfall. Definitely there'll be a shortfall with regard to finding of land rights. Thank you, Patrick. I think I've answered the question.
Okay, thank you. I'll deal with the governance issues, accommodation, and human resource. Maybe let me start with the employee satisfaction, which is at 82%. What we have noted is that employees, they are more on EVP than financial rewards. Chair, we had started with working from home long before the COVID-19, and we have found that this is also is appreciated by employees because we have certain days where people can work from home or they can work go to work directly, I mean straight from home, and then come back and then only report to the offices on certain days. So our employees liked that, and as I say, it's this working from home, which we call flexi working arrangement, was in place long before COVID-19. And the other thing that they appreciate is, you know, continuous improvement on EVP. And for example, when we increased our life cover, we noted that our employees appreciated so much because We had a we had people passing away due to COVID-19, and then that life cover helped our members. So that EVP in total is the one that is influencing people for not leaving or intend leaving us. Hence, we have a 5% instead of 10% a rate. And then with regard to why are we spending less than what we have planned, Yes, we acknowledge that will also has a potential to cause problems in future when we ask for more budget. But Chair, we were just cautious because if you look at the impact in the previous year, we had to do away with about 119 positions because of this budget cut. And we felt that because we our budget, we spend 90% of our budget on employees. And employees, by their nature, is they want certainty. If you offer them short-term contracts, you are likely not to attract good people. They want certainty, they want long-term contracts. And we were saying, it's what's the use of employing somebody this year, and the following year, then you want to terminate their contract. Hence, we were cautious in filling the position. But however, we take note of your consent, and for this current year, we will endeavor to reach that 98% so that it does not come back to bite us. And then with regards to the policy on virtual meeting, Chair, yes, we do not have the policy. We are in the process of drafting the policy that will guide us on how to conduct ourselves in virtual meeting as legal aid staff members. And the impact on COVID-19 service delivery, Chair, if you go to slide 4, slide 11. Under slide 11, it's a district court. The package was at 87. The target was at 87. Amount was 80, but we achieved at 87. So on the quarterly basis. On a quarterly basis, we monitored our court coverage, and we noted that our court coverage during COVID-19 they were lower as a result of this pandemic. So yes, it did impact our court coverage because some of the courts were not operational. And with regards to the offices that were destroyed in KZN, yes. The Bulwa satellite office was extensively damaged, and we lost all the records, and then therefore we reconstructed our records. Because it is a satellite office, we are operating from local office, and the satellite office was repaired, but we had challenges with obtaining certificate of safety and occupancy from the landlord, because we can't just move in without getting assurance from independent people that the buildings are safe to occupy. We have engaged with this landlord for the past 2 months, but we are not getting positive feedback, and now we are looking for alternative accommodation. And I think I've covered all. And then finance, CFO will cover finance, especially funding of land rights. Thank you, CFO. Thank you, Chair.
Can I go first with the service delivery, COO?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, NOE.
Okay, thank you. The first question that I'm going to answer is relating to from Honorable Swart, relating to the issue of budget reductions. How does it impact on us? For service delivery, it impacts on us because sometimes we have to cut on things like training and duty care. And if we have to cut on such things, they have a major impact, because like example, now we have specialized commercial crimes court. We have to make sure that those courts, we train people that would be covering them. So even the fact that we have one practitioner per court model, and we are operating with that strictly, we don't have any other options when our practitioners are sick or they are off. So we don't have any extra capacity. So we would obviously be impacted because we cannot extend any capacity either in civil or criminal. There's, and I think that the CFO will add with regard to others. With regard to transcribed records, we received a letter from KZN to say that we must pay for our own transcribed records. And we challenged that in court. We have a judgment against the OCJ relating to that. And we received the judgment, I think, a week ago or 2 weeks ago. And we have already started to engage the Department of Justice. We requested a meeting with them so that we can be able to iron out the issues. We don't want to see ourselves running to court every time that we have problems like this. So we trying to engage Department of Justice as well as Office of Chief Justice, because mostly with regard to the Department of Justice, in most areas, they do provide transcribed records, but the Office of Chief Justice is the one that doesn't assist us, especially with appeals that emanates from the High Court. So we have requested a meeting already. We are waiting for a date from them. We are trying to resolve the matter amicably, and we hope that it will be resolved. And I think that would also answer Honorable Wong's issue on records of appeal. And with regard to the issue of those who do not qualify for legal aid, I will leave it for Patrick. With regard to payment of services, why we don't have 100%. The issue is that for Judicare accounts, we have also our own internal checks that we have to do. Firstly, we have to confirm that the practitioners were in court, and we have to also make sure that this Judicare attorneys also attended to the matters in the way that they are claiming in the account. So we also need a record from the court, a copy of the record from the court, in order to pay to them. Usually it's in a form of the charge sheet that is handwritten by the magistrate or the presiding officer. And sometimes there are delays with regard to legal practitioners obtaining these records. And most of the time it's because of the delay from the practitioners that cause us not to submit not to pay the accounts on time. But if we receive everything, then we process the accounts timeously. And I think on the issue of Honorable Won regarding the percentage in regional court, the fact that we dropped drastically to 81%, there were several issues. I think even when the external auditors audited us, they also requested for the reasons as to why our court coverage dropped, and we gave them those reasons. There are several, including COVID, because most of the courts were closed because of COVID. Some of the times it was because of illnesses, either of any court official, including magistrates, prosecutors, stenographers, and police. Sometimes it would be also because of recording machines. We experienced lots of recording machines that were not working in the last quarter of the financial year. And we also experienced load shedding in some of the areas. KZN was also seriously impacted because of the July riots as well as the flood. So those were the reasons, amongst others, that caused, that impacted on the regional court to have a low coverage. Lastly, I'm going to answer the question about women empowerment. We, luckily that project, I started with it from scratch when we started it. I've been involved in it. And we have seen an improvement in the breathing patterns, our breathing patterns relating to women. We are continuously engaging Black Lawyers Association, NADEL, as well as South African Women Lawyers Association, SAULA, relating to the briefing patterns so that we can be able to involve them and we can gather most women who can be able to be accredited with us. We have also done some training for women relating to trial advocacy so that we can close the gap for them to do cases in the high courts. We have also gave women mentorship program and assisted them with cases in the high, especially in the high courts, so that they can be able to have mentors that can be able to give them guidance if they need guidance. We have seen a slight improvement. I think it was about 3 to 4% with our past report. We are also preparing the other report to the board that would be submitted to the board in November so that we can relook into our briefing patterns. Secondly, we also trying to make sure that in our impact litigation or strategic litigation matter, for every matter that we are approving, we make sure that the representation of the counselors and either even the juniors as well as the attorneys is balanced in a way that at least there must be a woman and at least there must be a woman of color. So we are trying and striving towards that. And I think that Patrick has the information about strategic litigation about the numbers. I know that he keeps the numbers. He will be able to tell us more about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting NOE. I will then just deal with some of the issues relating to finance. And first, I would like to elaborate on the response that was given by the legal executive, Tabiso, about the land rights, funding for the land rights management unit. So as he indicated that there is an allocation for a
Solo, we can't hear you. Is it low shedding? We can't hear Solo now. Okay, sorry about that.
Jay, shall I go with my issues and then hopefully by the time I'm done, the caller will be back.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Thanks, Judge. I think let me just, I'll deal with the issues. I think the one Honorable Schwartz asked, budget reduction and the impact on services, although we had a 31% increase, which is commendable. We must, however, remember that that 31% increase would have been on the 2020 and 2021 financial year, which had a severe impact on services insofar as it links to that. And therefore, our base is based on, the increase is based on a COVID year, and we're still building to get back to pre-COVID levels, particularly if you look at it from a civil perspective in terms of our numbers. You will find that at this stage in 21, 22, we didn't get back to pre-COVID levels. Insofar as the impact of the cost reductions, as I mentioned, we lost 119 positions. From a civil, just to give a practical example, it means that our internal capacity in terms of numbers of matters reduced from just over 47,000 to about 43,000. So that reduces your capacity to about practically 4,000 matters that you cannot assist in, which you previously could. The second impact of that is you have an immediate reduction in your capacity, but your caseload remains where it was where when you had those positions. And therefore, the remainder of the staff, particularly from a civil perspective, even on the criminal side, have to then deal with those matters. The impact from a criminal perspective is an increase in backlogs because it takes those number of staff longer to complete their cases. And we have previously warned as to that is the consequence of the cuts in the budget. I think COVID has had some, given us some relief, but now coming out and being in a post-COVID period, we must obviously see a greater amount of impact insofar as it links to that. So on the civil side, I can say we've spent the majority of last year managing the caseloads of practitioners. I'm currently busy with the review of the practitioner caseloads now, having implemented measures late last year to see how that has come and made sure that the caseloads of our practitioners is brought within acceptable levels. I can also say with COVID and the backlogs from civil, our matters beyond 18 months increased from about 18% pre-COVID to about 47%. And we've now once again been able to reduce that to about 33%. But we're still working on it. There are some areas where we can improve. So that is your impact, both of the reduction. And so because of that reduction, we also then have to bring in other waiting periods, or we have to refuse assistance due to lack of capacity. So that's what brings in terms of the impact of the budget cuts, and which from a COVID perspective has been exacerbated. I think there was a question on remand attorneys appearing on video. I will ask Paul to deal with that one, because I don't think she dealt with that. And that falls mostly on the criminal defense side. I've dealt with the impact of COVID delivery in terms of legal services to citizens. Obviously, the impact on the civil side, but also on the advice side, because at stages we did stop outreach to certain areas where we sent particularly our satellite officers to outreach sites, particularly when we went into these new phases of COVID, which increased the risk to our staff. So we found that there's also a significant decrease then on the advice side. Currently, I anticipate this year we should achieve about 150,000, but pre-COVID we were doing about 280,000. So we've also seen a drop in the number of our walk-in clients, and it's something we're trying to address with our communications, so that people know that we're back and we're fully operational. A lot of our staff in that stage also then went to our call center, and we had to direct them to our call center and arranging appointments. And so even from that on the call center, because we were working in two teams to reduce exposure, and that if one team was exposed, the other team could come in and take over, also reduced the numbers we could take in terms of calls. We eventually brought them on back in full capacity in November of 2021 so that we can increase the call load that we could deal with. In terms of the two avenues, too poor that do not qualify and the so-called missing group. So two ways it's correct. We do cater for it. Our means test is there, is determined, but Parliament and the committee will remember we did come to Parliament and the committee approved and both houses of Parliament approved, and it has been legislated that we now also on the civil side of things have a contribution policy. So despite someone exceeding the means test, where their case has merit and they require and not able to afford the full cost of their legal representation, we can then order that they be granted assistance subject to a contribution. We are doing that in both criminal and civil matters. So that's the way we've sought to introduce it. Difficult to answer is what's the extent of the gap group? Because there's no statistics out there as to people who are not being assisted. So we know who comes to us, who we accept, who we refuse, and in terms of the means test, where we refuse in terms of the means test, and those statistics are available. However, how many more are there that don't come to us that require assistance but ain't getting it? There isn't consolidated statistics for us to be able to give a cogent answer on that. We did do a document where we looked at the number of cases in the court versus what we provide. The difficulty with that comparison, though, is that there's no record kept of persons that went through the civil courts unrepresented. We do keep that we do analyze it from a criminal perspective, because there are, in the magistrates' courts, where the presiding officers have less than 7 years' experience and sentenced to more than 3 months, or where they've got more than 7 years and sentenced to more than 6 months, goes on automatic review if someone's unrepresented. And those numbers have been dropping from a criminal perspective. So I can say from a criminal, we've been watched those, and we will adapt our policy if we're finding that there's a gap. I think that's, I have dealt with the overall. Then the assurance for representation of regional court is required. I can say to Honorable Horn that obviously from a constitutional perspective, where someone requires representation in the regional court, it will be granted where they qualify in terms of our means test. The fact that our coverage decreased, we must understand that our coverage means that there's a certain number of days a court sits, and that we allocate resources to go to that court on a certain number of days. So if the court sits 5 days in a week, but we're only getting demand out of that court for a practitioner to go there 3 days a week, we will only allocate 3 days a week. So the courts then know that and would then roll it for when our practitioner is there for someone to apply for legal aid assistance. So from that, there's no one that will go unrepresented in the regional courts. It's just a question of how many days we are there covering those courts and attending to matters in the courts. And I hope that answers that concern about the assurance of representation in the regional courts. I think, Chair, from my side, I think I've covered it. I think the one aspect the COO might need to cover is the increase in grievances. I don't remember seeing that. Then on the briefing patterns in terms of women, I can say we have submitted a report to board. I can actually place it up and for the committee, just to give you an example in terms of the table that we're tracking in terms of our strategic litigation matters, that it's a report that's gone to board. I'm trying to see now. It's not showing me where my report is. Sorry, Chair, let me then just read from the report straight away. I think it's up now, Chair. So if you have a look, this is an overall summary of our briefing patterns in 21-22, an expenditure per race and per gender. So you can see overall we had a total of 111 briefs that went out. 46 went to African, 10 to Indian, 3 to colored, 52 to white. You can see the total briefs percentage that are there. Male-female split overall. Male was 42%, female was 58%. If you look at value in terms of the budget and value in terms of payments, you will then see that we track both the budget allocated and then the payment. So if you look at the percentage of budget, and for us, it was an analysis of why are you getting 67% of the budget versus African 26%, and whereas female were getting 59% of the budget and males 41%. The total value of our briefs was about 8.8 million. So 53% were issued to the BBBEE group as we defined it in our policy, but only represents 33% of the budget value. So this is indicative of the BBBEE group being briefed, being junior counsel, working with senior counsel, and women achieved 58% of the brief, which represented 59% of the overall budget. So overall, also for us to conclude that a lot of the senior counsel that were briefed were in fact white women as seniors. So I think that's just in terms of women empowerment, and obviously the board is tracking this, and we're really aware of it in terms of the allocation of briefs. However, in some instances where we fund and you get confronted with a legal team, sometimes it's difficult to change and influence it, but we've made our stakeholders very much aware of our briefing patterns in that regard. I hope that's answered the questions in terms of briefing patterns from an SLU perspective, which is a small element of our business. Thank you. I don't know if the CFO is back on, or maybe the CFO can then deal with these grievances. Francois, you want
to? Yes, thank you, Patrick. Apologies, committee members and the board. So in my response, I wanted to elaborate on the land rights management function, the budget for it. So yes, we have an allocation of 89. We have also made representations to Treasury for the contingent liability. And what we've done is we have staggered the contingent liability over the MTEF. So in the current financial year, we have made provision for 28 million. So in total, we would need 118 million. And this has been presented to Treasury, to the DOJ, and you know, it's being considered. We are hoping that the funding will come through in January after the adjustment budget process has been finalized. But we do acknowledge that there could be a shortfall, and hence, you know, the provision we have, the 33 million that we received, and the balance of the 24 million that we were able to retain from the prior year budget. So I think in terms of what we have now, we should have sufficient funding for the current year, but for the outer years, we will still need to engage with National Treasury and the DOJ. And in terms of the reduction of the budget, how it's impacted on operations, I think the acting NOE did touch on that. And I think in terms of our operations internally, I mean, there's been projects that we had to forego in order to prioritize, you know, the core business in ensuring that we have sufficient funding for service delivery. So there's like the building that we're currently occupying in Bramfontein needs to be refurbished. And we have, I mean, taken time to do that. But now with the land rights management function and the appointment of a team for that unit, we really need to look at that. So from a budgeting point of view and the spending pattern, I think we are aware that, you know, we need to be cognizant and mindful that we do not send back, or we don't reflect under expenditure at the end of the financial year, and we are really trying to ensure that we implement all the projects within the right timeline so that we are better managing our funding, and to ensure that even when we need to engage Treasury in terms of budget cuts, they are aware that we are spending in line with our targets. And in terms of the payment within 30 days, I mean, the reason why I think the acting NOE did touch on it from a judicare point of view, from a creditor's point of view, it's basically because of some queries that come where probably a service provider is charging us for services not yet rendered, or we are not completely satisfied with the services that they have delivered. And therefore, you know, there's some queries on the invoices, and hence the delay in paying more than 30 days. But there are not a lot of service providers or even Judicare that is paid more than 60 days in terms of our policy. And in terms of the other item that I wanted to deal with, also on the spending patterns, last year the moratorium on appointment of staff was lifted. So there is a huge drive now to fill the positions that we need to fill. And therefore we've seen now in Q2 already that our COE has improved significantly from Q1 because of the filling of positions. And obviously then there's also the judicare side where there are a lot of matters that are being referred and registered. And those are obviously we will need to carry, you know, that commitment until those matters are finalized. But we are, you know, making sure that we are spending in terms of our targets. Thank you, Chair. I think I've dealt with all of the matters.
Are there any outstanding replies?
Yes, Chair. I think that I just have to explain about the impact of COVID on criminal matters. Basically, the major impact was on the regional courts because there were several court closures. And we saw less matters being finalized, especially because there might be multiple accused or multiple lawyers in the matters. So we saw that now we have built a backlog in the regional courts. We are trying to engage our stakeholders in the regional court stakeholders meetings, so that we can be able to work closer with the regional court presidents and see how we can work. And that is being done provincially. But we are also trying to make sure that even in the National Efficiency Enhancement Committee, as well as the Provincial Enhancement Committee, we are trying, Efficiency Enhancement Committee, we are trying to make sure that we talk about these issues so that they can be resolved. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I think, Mr. Manganish, I think there's only one question I think that you asked about the number of grievances which has not been responded to. If the COO can deal with that, I think you said there were 12 to 16 yes. grievances. Yes. Can you deal with that, Stopo or Patrick? One of that.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the CEO best to deal with it.
Grievance, Chair, with regards to staff. With regard to yes. staff, we are experiencing a low number of grievances, but any other dispute that is referred externally, it gets reported to the board and we monitor the outcome thereof or progress thereof. But internally, I mean, we have 2,600 staff members. And then on average, we get like maybe less than five per quarter, which in my opinion is very low given the number of employees that we have. And any grievances, we have a grievance policy and procedure that must be followed, and then HRE deals with it to up to the end and make sure that all grievances are followed up. Thank you.
But that was not the question. The question was the grievances have increased from 12 to 16.
Yes, Chair. If I may, yes. What I'm emphasizing is that it's the number of staff. There's the number of grievances, and then compared to the staff, I'm opinion that is still below. And then what we normally do again, Chair, is we do have a training. We offer training to our employees just to make them aware that there are processes that they can follow. And we have noted that every time we do the training and people attend, then we see an increase, which means that we are empowering them. Some maybe they did not know that which channels to follow because not all our members are unionized, and therefore some increases are only after the training that we have offered offered them. We have had a recent training on sexual harassment and how to deal with it, and then also empower our local office heads on how to handle it. according to the policy and procedure. And even before they conclude, they must also engage the HRE just to make sure that they have followed proper procedures to, in handling the matters. So I will attribute this increase to the training that we are offering our employees. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Judge Mokomo.
Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, thank you very much. That concludes our presentation. If there are any other questions that are outstanding, as usual, I think we always invite you to send them in writing. We'll respond to that. That is all. Thank you.
No, thank you very much to you, Chairperson, Judge Makamo and Magume, sorry, and to all members of the Legal Aid South Africa. Thank you for the presentation. Legal Aid South Africa is one of the best performing organizations within our portfolio, and we are really blessed and proud to be working with yourselves. But one thing that should be going to all of us, even members of the parliament, one thing that should always be at the top of our minds is that we must always leave an organization better than it was when we arrived, not worse than it would be when we arrived. So we are calling upon members of the board that any organization should not be an extension of our egos, but it should be a weapon to serve our people better. So we think that this is the last time we receive a report of intra-board squabbles. I think from now the forecast would be to ensure that the organization moves from great to greater, from good to great. One of the things that I think we would like to receive from Legal Aid Board South Africa is that issue of the briefing patterns in a report format. We did when Mr. Andre Laka was reading, we do not have that document. So if we can receive that document so that we can be in a position to analyze it and we can have further engagement on your briefing patterns. But we are happy with the engagement. Thank you very much. Thank you, Judge Makome.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Members, can we have a 10-minute break? Then we can start with the information regulator. Maybe before we start with the information regulator, can I just, as members are going out or as people are going out, can I have members of the Portfolio Committee remaining just for 2 minutes?